is this? Boogie Wonderland?
This is Boogie Wonderland. Wow. Mark Roberts, our next guest, requested that we play Boogie Wonderland. It's his theme song. Wherever he goes, they play Boogie Wonderland. It's like Thanks for the Memories, Mark, right? Remember Bob Hope would show up somewhere and they'd play that?
Yeah, yeah. And Boogie Wonderland. I burst through a big paper picture of myself.
Right. Mark Roberts is a stand-up comedian, an actor, and a writer, and he has a new show premiering here in Chicago called New Country at the Den Theater. Great to see you again.
Good to see you, Bill.
I miss you.
Good to see you, Wendy.
You as well, Mark. We all go back a long time, and we met different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Long time.
Over 30
Rehab
years ago.
Rehab with me and Wendy,
yep.
And gay pride for me and Bill.
That's right. That's correct. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
You look a little different. You know, you walked by our lovely window here the other day, and Bill said, "Do you know who that was?" And I said, "Stephen Avery. Did they let him out of prison?" Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top.
Yeah.
Who was the other one? There was one more.
Well, the Unabomber's name came up once or twice.
Sure.
You're sporting a completely different look than we're used to seeing you with.
I haven't shaved for 2 years.
Right.
2 years?
2 years.
Boy, if I didn't wax, is that what I would look like?
I'm not going to go
ponder that
anywhere near that question.
Half Italian, that's why half.
Oh, sure, sure.
But this is obviously for the show.
You probably have to keep a candle in your purse, don't you?
Yes.
That's the song Elton John wrote about, Wendy. Candle in your purse. This is obviously for the show that you're doing, but I bet you're treated differently looking the way you look. You have a long, scraggly beard, and you're usually much more clean cut. And how do people react to you differently because of your look?
Well, you know, not to get all like, you know, to turn it into, you know, some sort of a pity case, like a black like me, you know, like I've had to, but you are absolutely treated different.
Yeah.
And I noticed it particularly at the gym. Like the Equinox in Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
Like when I first started going there, it was, you know, people were friendly and stuff. And now you are the crazy homeless guy that somehow got a pair of gym shorts and some some tennis shoes. And
he must be coming here to take a shower.
Yeah, yeah, poor thing. And nobody really talks to me. And, you know, like,
really?
You know, when an instructor will go around the room and go, okay, do this. They just really just pass me by.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm 55 years old, but on certain days with this, I look 70.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so
yeah.
I think it's just, oh, poor thing. You know,
isn't that, it's not a surprise, right? You mentioned the book and then movie Black Like Me. And for people who don't know the work, it was an author who I think for 6 months, I can't remember the time duration, but wore makeup to appear as though he was an African-American and
right.
Noticed what we all assume is that society just treats you differently.
Right.
Yeah.
How's it going at the health club? You were telling us off the air that working out and trying to keep in shape with that beard almost killed you.
Well, the swimming is not a good idea when you've got this much hair on your face. It's essentially like having a cat stapled to your chin.
Not good.
No. So
never good.
I tried the pool here for the first time and brought my head up to grab a gasp of air, and all I was met with was a wet
cat.
Beard, a wet cat. A wet cat was kissing my face.
That's not right.
It was
There's
not
no
good.
Part of that that's right.
Can you ponytail it up? Can you put it in a beardette, a barrette?
Well, I'm going to let you do that.
I'd like to braid it.
I'm going
to
see what we can do with
All
it.
All right.
I'm open for anything.
Talk about the show, New Country. What inspired it? What's it about? What do we need to know about New Country?
It's a little play that I wrote. It's a dark comedy about the... it's essentially about the world, the business world of men and how they treat each other and the ruthlessness that they display on each other, the lack of humanity. And it's set in the world of country music and takes place during a young country star's bachelor party.
Mm-hmm.
So it starts off with his managers, the people that handle him, and then the chickens start to come home to roost, and then the reality of who these people are and how they got to where they are starts to reveal itself. And I show up as his pig farming uncle from Kentucky. And
perfect.
Yes.
That's perfect.
Yes.
That's why the beard has been going for 2 years. Huh?
That explains this mess.
I've known you a long time. Is there a love of country music that I wasn't aware of? Are you a fan of country music?
Yeah, I've been a fan of country music for a very, very long time and have always been sort of adamant about the new country and you know, I'm a big fan of like Hank Williams, and I love old country music and the poetry of it and the fact that it was You know, it was roots music. It really was the Carter family. And it started out with these, you know, people of the land just expressing themselves. There was a, of course, that was stolen from black culture, but it was, mm-hmm. you know, it was original in its, when it first started. And then it's since been co-opted and I'm sure there's a lot of new country fans out there, but it's very much a
version of pop, isn't it?
It's pop. It's you know, what was the Greg Brady character on? It's Johnny Bravo.
It is, yeah. Johnny Bravo.
Who fits the suit? Yeah. You know?
I went to Nashville for the first time this past summer. My son did a blues camp there, and we went to the Country Music Hall of Fame. And I never thought, I mean, I liked the Outlaws. I liked Molly Hatchet. I liked the Allman Brothers. I didn't know I loved country as much as I did. And they were doing the Bob Dylan, Johnny Cash exhibit, and all these old session musicians, including Al Kooper from Blood, Sweat, and Tears. Mike Nesmith from the Monkees came up, did a song, wow. sang with his back to the audience, and left right away like he didn't really want to be there.
Right.
Charlie Daniels hopped on stage and then got into his helicopter and flew somewhere else to do a tour. It was really awesome.
Yeah.
So I am a lover of the roots of country music.
Well, do yourself a favor. If you get to Nashville, about an hour and a half away is Muscle Shoals. And I have a ton of friends. And Muscle Shoals, I don't know if you've ever seen the documentary about Mm-mm. Muscle Shoals Studios.
Mm-mm.
It's this little town in Alabama where they have this recording studio. The documentary is stunning.
Yeah.
But some of, like most of popular American music has been recorded in this little cinder block building. The Rolling Stones, Paul Simon, Leonard Skinner wow. started there.
Gotta go. This is in Alabama?
It's in Alabama. It's in Muscle Shoals, Alabama. And it's where Sam Phillips is from.
Yeah.
And so I started when really going there a lot and befriending the people there. And you know the song Sweet Home Alabama?
Sure.
In Muscle Shoals, they've got the Swampers.
Yeah.
Well, the Swampers is a group of old white guys that have lived in this town forever, and they played on everything. They are on every Aretha Franklin,
really,
all of her hits.
So
they're like
session.
The Wrecking Crew of country music.
Not just country,
yeah,
but soul,
everything.
And, yeah. So all of those early Aretha songs were these four
they
little
were the
white guys
musicians
in Alabama.
On this.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that documentary is one of those ones where you watch it. It starts out one way, and then it reveals itself,
yeah.
and you go, "Oh my goodness!"
Yeah.
And they just start flipping down the albums that were recorded in that place, and it's astonishing.
And when somebody shows up there, are you allowed to? You get to tour the studios if you like. They
well,
let you
that's when
it?
I play the show business card.
Oh, you do.
You know,
yeah.
Are you a fan of the television program?
Right.
Mike and Molly, which of course you created.
Yes.
And I'm going to drop your name when I go there this summer.
Do it. Actually, there. If talk to Bonnie.
All right.
She's more of a Two and a Half Men fan. So,
oh, okay. Which
so
you
play
also
that card.
On. All right. Bonnie.
When do you do it? She's not embarrassed about doing it.
Do
I
it.
Throw your name out if I go to Arby's. I go, Mark Roberts, the guy from Mike and Molly, we're very tight, and they give me extra horsey sauce.
If it gets you food or a better table, do it.
Here's what I propose. When do you get to shave that beard off? When does New Country wrap so you can get rid of that?
You want to do a fundraiser, don't
Wendy
you?
Wants to
no,
do a fundraiser.
I
want to
bring your beard to Bonnie when I go to Muscle Shoals and say, do you know what this is?
Mark Roberts, he melted.
This is his beard.
May 16th.
May 16th, the beard goes away.
This will be in a baggie.
Although, what if, let me throw a project your way, Keep on Truckin', the movie. If you got offered
Mr.
that.
Mr. Natural?
Mr. Natural. You could do that role.
There's a lot of roles I'd like to do. I'd like to do the Howard Hughes story.
Yes.
I'd like to do Tevye.
Tevye. Fiddler on the Roof.
Man of La Mancha. There's a lot of things I'd like to do before it goes away.
I am I.
The Golda Meir story.
Oh, you'd be great as Golda Meir. You'd be so good as that. Mark Roberts is here. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Now, this is music, Mark. This is music. Mark Roberts is here, stand-up comedian.
I can
comedian,
go as low as Johnny Cash can.
Actor and writer.
Ring of Fire.
That's very low.
That's
pretty good.
Very low.
That's pretty good.
That's very low. Mark is in town for the premiere of New Country at the Den Theater. That's on Milwaukee Avenue. There's a couple ways to get tickets. NewCountryThePlay.com or call the box office at 1-800-838-3006. You're writing now for the theater, for stage. You were writing for television. Before that, you were writing for stand-up. The differences are extremely varied, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still doing television stuff. I mean, right after I left Mike and Molly, I wrote a pilot for another pilot for CBS for Andrew Dice Clay that was bought by Fox and never filmed. And I've sold several pilots. I have another one that I'm developing right now that's a cartoon.
Oh, yeah?
That's
very popular.
Yeah. And I'm pretty excited about that one. And then I have, there's something weird that's sort of going on that Mr. Sheen called me a couple of months ago to actually work with him again.
So. Charlie or Martin?
Charlie.
Because Mr. Sheen, I'm thinking that's Charlie's dad.
Yes. Well, that's what his dad thinks, too.
But your relationship with Charlie, despite the fact that he had a kind of a rocky road there at Two and a Half Men, you guys ended on very good terms, right?
Well, Charlie Sheen was not the problem on that show. I mean, other than the fact that he was a crack addict.
Well, there's that.
You know, there was that. Right. That's an issue. But
you say that lovingly.
That's not the only problem.
He was a very kind man, and I've never. I don't think you would talk to anybody on that show that would have a bad word to say about him, other than he's very, very. You know, he's got some problems.
Yeah.
But he's a very good dude.
Yeah.
And
were you surprised to get a phone call from him?
I was surprised by a lot of things. I was in L.A. actually for the first time in 2 years, and I got a call from him and his manager, and I went over and met with them, and then had an idea that we talked about, and then we went to two different places and sold it at both places. As we were walking me to my car at Sony, he and his manager said, by the way, Charlie's going on TV on Monday to tell the world that he's HIV positive.
Oh.
Have a nice flight.
Yeah.
When I got back, it was like I'd sort of taken myself out of that world, and then I really got kind of sucked back into it.
Sure.
So I'm not sure what's going to transpire now. There's a lot of stuff going on that has nothing to do with me. But now the last word is Whoopi Goldberg now wants to be attached to it. So
really?
We'll see what happens.
Wow.
It's show business at its worst.
But what does that say about him? He had something of a reputation, even though a lot of people took Chuck Lorre's side in that battle on Two and a Half Men. But even though he was branded difficult to work with, there were still two places that right away you guys threw an idea at them and they went, yeah, we would love to work with Charlie Sheen.
People love him. And, you know, I mean, I have to tell you, I was working with Chuck Lorre before Charlie Sheen was attached to Two and a Half Men. I actually did Punch Up on the pilot.
Yeah.
Before it was sent to Charlie. In fact, you know, that pilot was actually written by a young New York writer by the name of Eric Lapidus, and he was pretty much kicked under the bus. And so that pilot wasn't even really created by Chuck Lorre.
Really?
But I was there from the very beginning, and I can say those words because it's true.
Yeah.
So I know what transpired, and I know I went back to visit a couple of times after I was working on Mike and Molly, and it was clear that Charlie was very, very ill.
Yeah.
It was very clear, but the cameras were rolling, people were still walking around, and it was business as usual, and it wasn't until he badmouthed Chuck Lorre in the press that the show was shut down. So that's about as simple a perspective of it as I can offer. He's troubled. He's you know, he was a star when he was 19 years old.
Yeah.
He had millions of dollars tossed at him. And it's a tough world to survive. But I've never seen him be unkind to anybody. So
that's great to hear. I mean, I don't know him personally, and you just know what you see. But to me, he has some issues.
Yeah. He actually offered, when I was in L.A., he's like, I'm flying to New York. Do you want to be on the private plane with me? And I'm like, no, not in 100 years am I getting on a, you know. He's like one of those guys, you love him, but you're like, no, I'm not. I don't need to be in your world.
You know, I have to say this. I was in both of the Major League movies with him, and I never saw anybody enjoy being in a movie more than he was. And I know he loves baseball, so there was that aspect to it. But every day on the set, he was just really, like, thrilled to be in a movie. And at that point, he had been in some great movies already. It wasn't a new experience for him.
Right.
But he just loved it.
I think when you ask the question, why do people want to continue working with him, people love him. And if you meet him and sit in a room with him, he's really funny. He's blunt. He's savvy. he's just got, you know,
yeah,
he's
so got a problem or two,
some habits,
right?
That, you know, I like candy and he likes other stuff,
right? Mike and Molly is wrapping up. This is their last season. Mm-hmm. When you first pitched the idea of Mike and Molly to the network, did you think it would have the longevity and do everything that it's done in the last few years?
Well, I never pitched it. I was in a position at that time because I had been head writer on Two and a Half Men for 4 years. They came to me and said, we want to offer you a script deal.
Yeah.
And a lot of times what they'll do is they'll give writers a script deal basically to supplement their income, to give them a bigger salary, but then they can write that off,
mm-hmm.
you know, if they even if nothing comes of it. And a lot of writers usually never take advantage of even writing the script. So I wrote, I sat down with their comedy development people, and because I had been the head writer, I just said, I'm going to write a blue collar comedy in the vein of Roseanne.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. That was the conversation. And while I was still being head writer on Two and a Half Men, I wrote it during the morning and at night. And then I handed it in right before Christmas. I got one note from Warner Brothers. And then 36 hours later, CBS bought it.
So, that fast?
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's and when you tell other writers about that, they get very mad.
Sure.
Because that's usually not the development process.
Right.
Where somebody just goes, I'm going to go do this. Leave me alone. But
that's,
I think,
excellent.
If you try it and see how they react, you know.
It needed to be written because Roseanne, I was a big fan of Roseanne. Your Chicago roots brought the Mike and Molly here to Chicago, a Chicago-based thing. It's a great show.
I loved working on that show because it was, you know, and I loved the detail of it. We actually had a full-time person here that would get all of the second unit footage. It was based on, like, all the houses that you see in the exterior was the line producer coming to me and going, where do you want Mike's mom to live? And I'd go, Northwest Side, Cicero and Foster, something brick.
Yeah.
And so... And then we'd have relationships with all of these people in these houses. So they'd put up their Christmas lights in November. They'd do whatever we needed them
awesome.
To do. So
I remember how accurate, if somebody was driving from the city to a certain suburb or something, I'd watch the show and I'd go, that's right, where they're driving. That's pretty accurate.
That was my ADD.
That's great detail, though. It worked out nicely.
And Vince Maranto, come on. We all know Vince Maranto. And the character in Mike and Molly was not Vince Maranto. Just your friend, just a little shout out.
Well, that was like a lot of fun. I mean, I was sitting across from Carla at the time, and Carla Felicia, and we had written this part for. It was originally written for John Polito, the actor from the Coen Brothers movies. You're giving me the hi hat.
Yeah.
So I was just writing this funny Chicago Italian character, and we're like, we got to name it. And I just go, Vincent Maranto.
Yeah.
And Carla laughed and I laughed. And, you know,
that was it.
And I emailed Maranto and said, got a surprise for you. But Mike and Molly is actually a bar in Champaign, Urbana. So the show itself is named after a bar in my hometown.
That's so cool.
Really?
Yeah. So
that's
so
cool.
Yeah. It's owned by my friend Mike Murphy. So when a pilot got sold, I said, here's the good news. There's a TV show named after your bar. Bad news is you don't get a dime.
We have to go see his play.
No question about it. New Country at the Den Theater. That's 1333 North Milwaukee Avenue. A couple ways to get the tickets. You go to newcountrytheplay.com or you can call the box office at 1-800-838-3006. It starts when, Mark? I'm trying to remember. I know previews are coming up very soon, right?
Yeah, February 20th, I believe, is the first preview. And
very soon.
It officially opens on the 27th. But anytime you guys want to come, just let me know.
Oh, we can't wait. We
want
can't
to
wait.
See it.
You got a huge hit coming.
And it runs through May 14th. When do you shave that beard?
I thought it was the 15th.
Oh.
So I get to shave a day early.
Unless your hockey team makes the playoffs and then you have to keep the beard. You know that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a playoff beard. You can't get rid of it. It's bad tradition. Great to see you.
Good to see you.
Keep up the great work. That's Mark Roberts. We'll be back after this. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder.
I'm rocking.
Wendy is rocking. Let the record show. Wendy is officially rocking. I'm being a little more careful, but you are rocking.
It's Friday.
Yeah, it is. It is. Kurt Wagner's here from TVShowPatrol.com to talk about your favorite television shows and the ones you don't like also. Hi, Kurt. How are you?
Hi.
Nice to see you. The Super Bowl was Sunday. Now, traditionally, the Super Bowl, that means big numbers. That means huge ratings. That means a lot of controversy over the commercials.
Usually it means good commercials.
Almost always. Did the ratings live up to...
Does that mean you didn't like the commercials?
They weren't as great as usual.
All right.
A lot of dead air right there, but Bill's not going to back me up.
It was a little lackluster. The game was a little lackluster. The halftime show...
There were a lot of talking animals
Yes.
in the commercials this year.
Which is very cute, but you know what? When they're all talking animals, they all blend together.
Right. That was the premise by which The View was created. We'll just have a lot of mammals talking at the same time and see what happens. Were the ratings up to snuff? Were people happy with the ratings?
I think so. Yeah? I think, didn't they say it was second highest or something?
Was it really?
I don't know that that's, I mean, I have to look that up. But
that says
a lot. I thought I read something that that was the case.
With a game that was average at best, that says a lot about what the Super Bowl is. People will tune in no matter what.
15.2 million people in the U.S., oh, no, that's tweets about the Super Bowl. Sorry.
I was going to say that number's down then if it's just 15-2.
Where is it? I can't find it.
All right. That's all right. You can find it. But here's what
wait.
This is the reason I bring it up. There was an announcement made during the Super Bowl. There was an ad for The Good Wife, a CBS show, and they were talking about all the twists that you've seen over the years on The Good Wife. And they said, and here's one more twist. We only have 9 more episodes left. That surprised a lot of people.
Yes. It did. And it surprised, I think... All the TV critics who are in my Twitter feed were freaking out about it because nobody really knew about it.
They felt left out.
Yeah. I think everybody was a little mad that they weren't able to break that news,
they
didn't have that in, you know, because CBS kept it really quiet. TCA in January, people asked about it because the Kings, who Michelle and Robert, I don't know what his name is, the creators of the show had announced that they were leaving at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And so everybody was asking if it was going to go on, and the CBS president said, you know, it's too early, it's January, it's too early to make that decision.
But I bet the network really hurts on something like this because the ratings have been consistently good from the first season, and they don't want to lose one of the top shows.
I think the network actually, you know, the Kings, I did this call with them on Monday, and they said that they were very happy that the network honored their original idea. When they set out to do the show, they said 7-season arc.
Yeah.
And they said they felt sort of honored that the network decided, you know, we're not going to continue it without them.
I always wonder if that's not a bad thing for a show to come in and say, and I know that depending on how popular or unpopular a show is, you're going to make an adjustment, but I love when a show goes, we're going to do X amount of seasons. I remember when Lost did that. Lost announced 2.5 years before they ended, this is where we're going to end the show. And then you kind of have an idea of, you know, for if you're one of the creative forces, what do we need to do to wrap this thing up?
Yeah, but they
properly.
Still didn't wrap it up properly, and I miss it tremendously.
Well, they feel they did, I think. But that's they talked about that. They said, you know, when you have something, a goal you're writing toward, it makes the writing snap a little
better. I bet
it
does.
You know, because you're not trying to fill. You're not doing 22 episodes trying to fill in little spots and everything. So. Yeah.
May I jump in with a little X-Files thing? Because I think we had, 6 episodes that they agreed to? And if everything goes well, and I would imagine they get enough money, they would continue this. After the season... The two-part beginning, there was episode 2, I guess we would say.
Technically episode 3, because you had one on Sunday night, one on Monday
Lizard
night.
Lizard-related, let's just say that.
Yeah.
In the old days of X-Files, which I did not miss an episode, there were funny little quips, and there were moments where it would suspend belief. I know a lot of people would say it suspends belief a lot because it involves aliens and such. But this one, in particular, to me... was too campy and too funny and too more of a comedy, like watching Creepshow. And I just feel with them only having 6 episodes, they should suck us in and then go a little nutty.
This is the one I was talking about. I think when we talked about it before it started, that there's this one episode that that everybody will probably say this about because it's true.
I remember that.
It's true because, you know, there's only 6, but, you know, they...
They're showing what they can do, too.
Yeah, Chris Carter said, you know, we always used to have these, so we're going to have one in this thing.
Yeah.
You know, they always used to, but when you have a season of whatever they used to, I don't know if their seasons were full 22 episodes or not, but when you have a longer season and you have two of those in there, when you have 2 of those in there, it's not quite as jarring.
Right.
You know,
and this, the third one.
Right. For those of us who loved the show as much as we all did, their bread and butter, the thing that they did best, were the really creepy episodes.
Right.
And you'd think, if you're only doing six, keep most of those.
Right.
That's what we want to see.
Or even the mythology. You know, you're dropping, you have six episodes to get through this mythology that you set up in the first episode.
Right.
And, you know, you're almost, if you want to call it, wasting an episode.
Yeah.
I mean, it was funny, I thought, but some of it wasn't as funny.
And
it
went way over the top. And it's funny because being the X-Files fan, and Bill, I don't know if you watched with your kids who had never seen the originals, but with my kids, there was a certain point involving Scully. I said, that did not happen. It's like, oh, no.
Right.
I bet it. I said, trust me, that did not happen.
Right.
Because we know our characters.
Right.
And I love them. I love Scully and Mulder. Spooky Mulder.
It is nice to see the show up and running again. And when it is firing on all cylinders,
right.
It does remind you of the glory days of the show. I just hope they can sustain it.
Yeah, it was just odd. It was just odd in the six-episode order that they had that in there, I think.
Yeah.
But still good, but just wasn't ready for it yet. And with new fans, I think it might have changed things.
Right. Kurt Wagner's here from TVShowPatrol.com. If you have a question or comment, 312-981-7200. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. This is
the Club Neo version.
Yes. I got an X-Files flashlight in my loot crate for the month. It's this thing you can, I think it's like $12.99 a month, and every month you get cool new things depending on what shows are coming out. So I got an X-Files flashlight, and the minute I shone it on the wall the other day, WGN TV News started this theme. So I thought, wow,
that's
timing.
Incredible.
I should
timing.
Play the lottery, and then I forgot to play that.
Oh, that's all right.
I would have won.
That's all right.
You would have.
Kurt Wagner's
a
here
lizard.
From TVShowPatrol.com. Kurt, here's a cool miniseries that's starting up. It's called 11-22-63. It's based on a Stephen King novel. You've seen some of it. What do we need to know?
It's very good. It's not great. It's great. It's good. It has James Franco plays this guy who goes back in time to stop the Kennedy assassination.
Love the idea of it
time
already.
Time travel.
Yeah, and he goes back to 1960 because he has to spend 3 years getting himself into a position where he can do this thing.
Yeah.
So
little prep work before you can save the day.
Yeah, so it doesn't go right to that, so don't be impatient
because
he has to get there, but it has all these very cool things happening on his way there. And like he ends up, you know, what I like about it, and then what I think is the fun stuff, is you see him in the present, and Chris Cooper plays the guy, a friend of his who runs this diner, who actually knows about the rabbit hole, as he calls it, the time-traveling closet.
Yeah.
And so he sends him on this mission because he is, you know, he can't finish it or whatever. But you see James Franco in his position. He's a teacher, and you meet all these people he knows, and then when he's back in time, you meet their parents,
you
meet them as children, or, you know, and he's able to affect their lives in a positive way, hopefully. So you see all this other stuff on his journey to get to Dallas and on 11-22-63.
You know what the premise reminds me of, and you may be too young to remember, but the show The Time Tunnel. Did you ever see The Time Tunnel?
I've heard of it.
With James Darren and Lee Merriweather. Do you remember that show?
I remember James Darren and Lee Merriweather, but I didn't know.
It was the premise was two guys, they had built a time tunnel that looked like the Parker Brothers logo, and then what they would do is they could walk into it and go back and do exactly what
I've never seen that.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, it was a great show.
I only know Lee Merriweather as Catwoman.
Yeah, one of the many. One of the many Catwomen. All right, so this is going to be on Hulu, right? That's where you can see 11-22?
Yes, it starts Monday on Hulu. And they're doing it, they're not dropping all the episodes at once. They're doing it weekly.
Isn't that weird? Because Hulu's theme seems to be exactly that. You can see as many episodes as you want all at once. I wonder why the backlash.
They're doing
this the
weekly.
Other way.
I'm sure there's a reason, but I don't know what it is.
There's several people who want to talk to you, Kurt. Again, we're at 312-981-7200 if you have a question or a comment for Kurt Wagner from TVShowPatrol.com.
Who do you want to talk to?
We'll start out with Mary because she's talking about what we're talking about. Let's see what she's got.
All right, Mary, hello.
Hi.
You read the book, correct? You read Stephen King's novel version of this?
Yes, and I'm rereading it, getting ready for the show.
No spoiler alerts, but if it plays according to the novel, it should play out nicely, right? It's a pretty good story.
It is really good.
Yes, that means good. Yep.
Well, from what I understand, Mary, you will be surprised, too. There's some new things.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, well, you know, that's what happens with a lot of movies that go from books.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a slight change. Why not? Makes perfect sense.
Yeah,
thanks,
like
Mary.
Under the Dome.
Yeah, Under the Dome's a good example. Yeah, well, thanks so much. Yes. Appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, and Jody's on the line. Hi, Jody.
Hi. One of my favorite shows is the original NCIS, and I understand that Michael Weatherby is leaving the show, you know, this year. Do you know of any character or characters they might bring in, or are they going to just end the show?
I don't know. Anything about, I know he's leaving, but that's I don't think they're ending the show. The show's the number one. I think it's still the number one
it's
show.
It's way up there, yeah.
And possibly the number one show in the world, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
He's one of the main characters, and, you know, I mean, they focus on him all the time.
And people get new jobs. I mean, they'll just, you know, I'm sure they'll find another agent that fits that, you know, that space in there. I'm not sure if they're bringing anybody.
Thanks, Jody.
Thank you.
People are always baffled by that, but if you've played a role for a while and you're an actor, even though the money's good and the recognition is good, at some point you go, I don't just want to be this one guy. That's not why I got into the business.
Right, exactly. You want to, I mean, if you feel like you've done everything you can with a character, then, you know.
Are you a fan of the show The New Girl on Fox?
I don't watch it regularly.
You don't watch it regularly?
No.
They're doing something interesting. Zooey Deschanel, who's the lead, she's the new girl.
I love her.
I love her, too.
Ever since Elf, I have fallen in love
she's
with her. I'm not kidding.
She's so quirky and great.
I love her.
The writing on that show is so tight. It's one of those shows, 30 Rock used to do this, too, where you'd watch it once and you'd laugh, and then you'd watch it a second time and go, I just saw that episode, and I don't remember that part of the joke. That's how quick the jokes fly on that. Well, she's pregnant in real life. So what they've done on the show is they've said that she's going to jury duty. She's off at jury duty, and they brought in Megan Fox, who's completely different from her, and she's kind of filling in. She's playing a different character. She's playing somebody who just needs a place to stay for a short amount of time, so she is. But my daughters, who love the show too, said, this is going to ruin the show, and we watched the first Megan Fox episode the other day, and it's still great. I mean, it comes at you from a different direction, but it's still so funny.
Right, and they've had a lot of, I'm not necessarily cast changes, but they've had additions and and like flips and stuff like that. So, I mean, that's always good when it's a long-running show to try to keep it fresh. And, you know, that's a novel way to do that, you know, instead of a cast member got pregnant or, you know, they would do the pillow in front of them all the time or they would try to write it in and, you know, that can get old too.
Yeah. No, I like the way they've done it. One of the writers on that show is, I think her name is J.C. Philbin. It's Regis Philbin's daughter, who some of the funniest episodes are written by her.
Oh, that's...
Yeah.
Does she have high blood pressure too?
I don't know if she does. That's a great question.
And that has good Chicago connections too, because one of the actors or two of the actors are from Chicago, I think.
Yeah, a couple. Yeah.
TV shows, Outlander, best show ever, tell me more.
Oh.
What is that?
I just wrote an Outlander piece yesterday. That is a show on Stars. It's based on Diana Gabaldon. Yes, I think I saw you say her name. Her book series called The Outlander Book Series, and it's about a nurse in the 1940s who visits Scotland with her new husband, and she touches a stone, like a Stonehenge type stone, and is sent back in time to the 1700s Scotland, and she meets this very handsome Highlander dude who wears kilts.
And no undies.
And she has to, like, you know, live in this world. She's stuck back there for a long time. And it had its first season last year, highly successful, big time success. And they just sent out they just announced the premiere date for season two yesterday and a new teaser. And they showed, like, a teaser photo of them because this year they're trading in their rags that they wear in Scotland for Parisian finery because they're in Paris.
Now you've sold me.
Yeah,
until
they're in
you
Paris
told me that, I wasn't
so
sure.
So you will see this beautiful red dress that she's wearing on the front of my website right now.
On TVshowpatrol.com.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was a really good show. I really like it, yeah.
Anything on The Last Man on Earth, Will Forte, love that show. That's who Mark Roberts reminds me of a little bit, Will
with
Forte.
The scraggly
with the
beard?
Yeah.
I saw Will Forte showed up at a party at TCA in January in Pasadena with...
Half and half.
The half and half.
And he was shaved on one side of his head and scraggly and long on the other side.
Yeah. And it was so weird. It was so weird to see him in person like that. And I don't know when that's coming on the show.
He was just singing. There was like a salute to Fleetwood Mac in L.A. My friend Lisa Nelson, who writes for Last Man Standing, sent me this. And it was just a bunch of celebrities up on stage singing Fleetwood Mac songs. And Will Forte was one of them.
He's got a decent singing voice.
He
I've
really
heard him sing
does.
Before. He's pretty good. He really is. Kurt Wagner's website, again, is called TVShowPatrol.com. It's right there on your internet, so take a look at it. Thank you, Kurt. Have a great weekend.
Yeah.
Nice seeing you.
Have a good weekend.
We'll take a quick break, and then a lot more coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Veronica. Nice to meet you on the air. I've listened to you for years and heard you at numerous places, and it's nice for you to be a part of the show.
I was just telling you that there was one time I was driving, and you guys were doing this skit about the Blackhawks, and literally I almost drove off the road. I was laughing so hard.
Well, thank you.
I think it's when you inserted yourself, Bill, into the roster.
Yeah.
That was good.
There was a time we were running an ad where all the Blackhawks said their name, and I thought my name should be part of that roster. I'm a big Blackhawks
Kane,
fan.
Kane, Panarin, Taves.
Bill Laff. Because they always say that the fan is the extra player, and I said, well, here's a chance to take them up on that offer. And you were upset about it, Wendy. I don't know why.
I would like to see you take a puck in the face sometimes.
Thank you.
Every Valentine's
Maybe
Day.
Maybe I will. Maybe that's your birthday present.
You know, there are some people who could take a flirt in the face and never realize they're being flirted.
What does that mean exactly?
It means, I didn't say that right, but some people suck at flirting, bottom line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Some are better than others, sure.
And there are a lot of people, I found this pretty startling because flirting is pretty fundamental. Humans do it all the time, and you'd think that we would have figured out when someone's flirting or not.
Well, there's no class on it. I mean, you just kind of pick it up by being on the planet. I mean, you can't go to the...
Flirting 101?
There's no flirting 101. You just either figure it out or you don't.
You know what? And this is a totally unrelated issue, but I'm signing my son up for, like, consumer economics or whatever it is. And we did that in high school where you learned how to balance a checkbook.
Sure.
And I think there should be a parenting class in high school.
Yes.
Because I'm telling you, although I probably wouldn't have taken it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I could use some teachings.
Well, yeah. Yeah,
and why couldn't there be a flirting 101? People have to know when they're being flirted with.
Did you ever see somebody do this? This is almost exclusively a woman's thing. I don't know that I've ever seen a guy do this. But you'll see a woman do that wink every once in a while. Like she'll say something that's obviously in jest and then she'll give you that wink and you go... What year is this? Am I in a time machine?
Yeah, but some guys are just so unobservant or, I guess, naive that they'd go, do you have something in your eye?
Yeah.
Did a bug just fly in there?
Well, that particular flirt maneuver, the wink, just seems like something from a long ago era. But somebody will say
something
borderline cute, and then they give you a wink. It's like, all right, I get it, Zsa Zsa Gabor. You're messing with me. I understand.
You know what? You're right. No one does the wink anymore. Now?
I saw it as recently as a couple of years ago. I was someplace
in real life.
Yeah, and I just went, really? Did you just do that on purpose? But I don't think I've ever seen a guy do it. Would a guy ever say something kind of cute and then give you a wink?
That'd be crazy. Would just do the hands out in front of him like he's honking two horns.
Wah, wah, wah. Yeah, guys are cavemen. I apologize for all men. I'm sorry.
I got to ask you a question, by the way, before I get out of here. I'm not doing the second half of the show.
Then I'm not either.
No, you have to.
I have to. All right, I'll stay.
I'm taking a half a sick day.
All right.
All right, well, flirting, it's a fundamental human activity, so you'd think we'd have figured it out by now. But these statistics, I'm shocked. According to a recent study, we're not even close. Only 18% of women knew that a man was flirting with them in a one-on-one situation.
18% seems low to me. Is that true?
I can tell if someone's flirting with me.
What's a sure telltale sign? What happens where you go,
he puts his hand in my pants.
That would be a sure telltale sign. Yep. That's blatant flirting.
No, you can just tell if somebody's flirting with you. Like maybe they rub your arm or they're like, hey, how's it going? You can just kind of tell if somebody's digging on your scene. You can't because you don't even know what
true.
That means.
I don't know what that means.
Aren't you astounded that only 18% of women know?
Yeah, that seems very low.
Men didn't do a whole lot better, getting it right 36% of the time. 36% of men can figure out when a woman's flirting with them.
You know how if
you
you're
guys
a woman,
think we flirt with you when we're not.
Oh, that's the truest thing in the world. That's the truest thing in the world.
Oh, she was totally. I will not name names of someone at this radio station and don't.
All right.
But he would come up and say, oh, God, she was totally undressing me with her
eyes.
And we're like, no, she's very nice to everybody.
At the radio station that you and I both worked at prior to this one, all right, there was a parking garage that was kind of around the block that most people who worked at the station would use to park their car. One time I get into the elevator there, and this will just show you how guys think that women are flirting when there's none of that at all. I get on, and there's one other guy getting on with me on the ground level. We go up a floor or two, and another woman gets on, and she says to the guy who's close to the elevator, "Could you hit 6 for me, please?" And he gives me a look like, huh? Like, does she want me or what? She wants me to push the button when all she would have to do is reach out and push the button herself. And I gave him a look like, yeah, she's really interested in you because she asked you to hit an elevator button for her.
And all that goes ridiculous.
In men's world, by the way, that all went on in a split second. He gave me the look. I gave him the look like, yeah, really? Yeah, she is all over you, Mr. Button Pusher. She wants you.
All right, you're jealous. You're throwing down over the guy.
There was no jealousy. I found it ridiculous that he thought he stood a chance for her because all she asked him to do is hit 6, please.
All right, so men, it says 36% of the time men know when they're being flirted with. That should be higher then.
It should be higher.
Because they think it's like that should be 99%.
Somewhere in the high 99s.
Because men think we're flirting all the time. Hi, Judy.
Hi, how are you?
Can you tell when somebody's flirting with you?
It's been a while. Yes, I think I can. But I think the problem with reading facial cues anymore, I think that there's so much going on with computers and phones and texting that people don't read facial cues or emotions as well as they used to.
That's true.
It makes a lot of sense.
That is true. You need a flirt app or a flirt emoji now, Wendy. It's not like the old days where you could just make your eyebrows go up and down really fast.
Yeah, and then I'd go, what, are you trying to be Gene Shalit?
Yes.
All right, well, thank you. That's a good point, Judy.
I think you are right about having classes, though, and that might be an important class to have.
Wendy, teach a flirting class.
Oh, I could do it.
Discovery Center.
All the girls would have fake eyelashes so we could wink at the men. Thank you so much, Judy. Happy Valentine's Day. Though men aren't exactly flirt detectives, women are far worse, which could be because women are simply more transparent when it comes to showing interest in everyday situations, like pushing a button. We could do it like, hey, could you get that button for me? And even though I'm saying it like that, I don't mean I want to undo your button.
Right. You just need something done. Like you would say something like, you look like a guy who knows which buttons to press. Could you hit 6? Like that, something like that. Right.
Because that's what we do. We try to make, you know, men feel better so they'll do what we want.
I guess.
Maybe I should try that with my husband.
See what happens. Good luck.
And I also want to ask you, you know, with it being my birthday weekend, Valentine's Day kind of falls to the lower rung.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to get Jim something for Valentine's Day. And what do men like for Valentine's Day?
Hmm.
I don't even know. Does candy work for you?
Yeah, I'd be all right with candy, but I don't know if he would. He's a Star Wars fanatic. Isn't there some Valentine's Star Wars tie-in that you can find?
I could get Carrie Fisher to come to the house and deliver hot cookies.
Knowing,
you would like that too.
Can I tell
you're
you what?
Speechless.
Knowing Carrie Fisher's story, she would do it. I think if you called her, she would go, yeah, what time do you need me to come by? I could do that for you.
But not cookies. She would have to, you know, deliver the stupid cinnamon buns.
Is cinnamon buns on the head? Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, I'm not shopping. It should be like a token of my love.
I don't think guys really want or expect anything for Valentine's Day.
Really?
I don't expect. Yeah, every once in a while, Terry will get me something, but I'm not expecting anything. I don't need anything for Valentine's Day.
What are some of the things she's gotten you so I can have some ideas?
I'm trying to think. Usually it's something in the food family, some kind of food that I like she'll go and get special
Vanilla
for
wafer?
Me. Yeah, yeah. That seems minimalist, but yeah. Yay, it's Valentine's Day. I got my annual Nilla wafer. Yay.
I meant a whole box.
No, just the one. She gets them separately for some weird
reason.
Like,
would chocolate-covered strawberries work for him?
Yeah.
I just don't know what guys want.
Who would want that? Who would not want that?
I know what guys want. I don't.
Do you remember one year, and I don't know if it's still that way, but for some reason the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue, does it still come out like right around this time of year?
Is that what you're suggesting I get him?
Well, one year Terry got me that, and I thought that's a strange gift. Is the swimsuit issue for Sports Illustrated?
Did you think it was a trap?
Yes, I think everything's a trap. No matter what it is, I look for a hidden wire. All right, let's do this.
Really, how do you react to that without thinking you're either going to get slapped?
I thought that was a strange gift, and it was only the one year because I even said to her, "I go." I know this is meant, you know, but I don't know what that, thank you, I guess. I don't know what to, it's a strange one, right? All right, we'll take a break. More flirting talk if you want to jump in. 312.
Ideas for men.
Yeah, what do you get?
Because women really, do you already know what you're getting, Terry? Or usually you go out to eat and maybe get some chocolates or flowers.
That's pretty much the route we're taking, yes. Yes.
Not that, you know, spoiler alert.
Right.
But men are hard. I mean, do you expect a Valentine's Day gift? Because I don't, because it's my birthday weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'm thinking, you know, and I make heart-shaped pizzas with the boys every year.
Right.
And they really, I mean, I guess I'm a better mom than I thought. I did it when they were little. And every year they say, hey, are we making
those
heart-shaped pizzas?
They want that tradition to continue. Yeah.
So we do that, and they get candy.
Right.
But I don't have anything for Jim.
That's a tough call. All right, help Wendy out. 312-981-7200. We'll come back in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It is Bill F. It is the weekend of love, or amore, if you speak foreign languages. Wendy Snyder's not here. It's her birthday. She's at Chuck E. Cheese's on Rand Road helping set up for a huge party, and you're all invited. Veronica, I want to make sure I understand one of the stories correctly that you did in the news. It's cold out. There's no doubt about it. It's cold out. If you've been outside or if you have a window at your house or your apartment, you can look outside and you can see. It's cold out. It's so cold, if I'm understanding the story right, that they have canceled the ice festival.
That sounds amazing. It's an ice festival, right. So you would expect things to be a little chilly.
I would think if I was the organizer of an ice festival, and I've considered that as a career option, I would think the colder the better for an ice festival.
You would think. You know, when I was looking at that going, it's, you know, 10 below with a wind chill factor. But we're even colder here tomorrow.
Right.
You know, we're not. You're going to still see people walking out on Michigan Avenue. They're not going to stay home.
Nope. We're the toughest people in the world here.
I think
here.
So.
It doesn't matter how cold it is. The words wind chills factor, they just bounce right off of us. Or they hit us and then they crack like ice cubes and they fall off of us. But we're not afraid of a little cold.
Yeah, I'm amazed at that. I mean, I know it's probably a safety issue and they're worried about being sued and
right.
et cetera, et cetera. But
right.
if you can't even have an ice festival when it's icy, what can you do?
Something's very wrong. Something's wrong. It's one of those things that I put in the bracket of only in Chicago. And I'll give you another one. And it's actually coincidentally another one of your news stories. I have tried so hard to like the Chicago Bears. I really have. I grew up here. I live here. I want the Bears to be my team. And yet, as hard as I try to enjoy them, they keep doing things that make me not. For instance, and the story today is this, Matt Forte, who you could easily say is the best player on the Bears. I don't know who isn't if it's not Matt Forte. And because of his hard work over the past 8 seasons, it's time for him to leave. They don't want him to be a Bear anymore.
Plus, if I remember my history right, he didn't cause any problems.
No. He's nothing but good on the field and off the field. He's a model citizen. If you give him the ball, he'll head in the right direction. He'll do everything he can to get more yardage. And to that, the Bears say, no, thank you. We'll have none of that.
Sounds like radio, doesn't it?
I wasn't going to say that, but I'm nodding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. There's a story. Brad Biggs covers it, of course, for our Chicago Tribune. He talks about Matt Forte. And this is a guy who's just gifted. I mean, from the very first time he came up with the Bears, I think he played for Tulane in college. I'm almost sure he played for Tulane in New Orleans. From the very first time he took over as a member of the Bears, you said to yourself, we've got something in this guy. He can catch passes. He can run. He understands the game. I love this guy. And the Bears just don't seem to get it that you want to fill a team with good players. I don't understand. I can't figure it out. Here's what Brad Biggs writes. And this is very, very recent. This is as of this morning. Playing for an organization with a deep history of some of the best running backs the NFL has ever seen, and we can count them if we want. You have Walter Payton. You have Gale Sears. The Bears have been good at finding premier running backs. They have. Matt Forte walks away as the second most productive back in Chicago Bears history. Forte announced on his Instagram account Friday morning that the club informed him earlier this week he was not in its plans moving forward. He will be an unrestricted free agent and is free to sign with any team beginning March the 9th. That's sad.
Yeah, if he were like the 20th most productive, you
right.
know, but the second most productive, and now all of a sudden
that
it's
says
like,
something.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's so frustrating. The Bears met with Forte and let him know that they plan to go in a different direction. So here's your two directions when you're a football team. Up or down. and he knows what he's doing. He knows how to get yardage. We don't want that kind of player. Out. It's not a surprise that Forte had admitted that this was a very real possibility, before the season ended. Yeah, this really, if you've been following the team, you know that this isn't a huge shock. Nobody really expected the Bears to re-sign Matt Forte. Despite my wishes, he says, Matt Forte says, my days as a member of the Chicago Bears have sadly come to an end. I was informed earlier this week from the GM, that's Ryan Pace, that they will not be attempting to re-sign me in free agency. I will remain forever grateful for my time spent in Chicago, and I'll be able to play for an organization with such a rich history. My only regret is not being able to win a Lombardi Trophy for the best fans in all of sports. I'm excited about the next chapter of my NFL career, but Chicago will always be my home. God bless and bear down.
He sounds nice, too, doesn't he? Wouldn't it be nice if just all the nice people moved ahead?
Yeah.
Ah, dream on.
That's a class act. If you followed what happened last week with Cam Newton, the quarterback for the Carolina Panthers, who was criticized not only all season long for showboating, but then at the end of the year at the press conference after the Super Bowl when they lost, he just decided a couple minutes in he had quite enough and he walked out. I don't see Matt Forte as being that kind of a guy, a model citizen on and off the field, a guy who just wanted to play for his team, just wanted to keep being a Bear, and the Bears said, no, thank you, we don't want that. That's frustrating, isn't it?
It is.
That's so frustrating. That and the fact that it's too cold for the ice festival. What's going on, Veronica? What has happened to our fine city?
Oh, I don't know.
I'll tell you one good thing that is coming up, and that's the Chicago Auto Show. Tom Appel will join us in just a little bit, in about 15 or 20 minutes. Nobody knows cars the way Tom Appel knows cars. I used to hear him on with Steve and Johnny late at night, and I was spellbound at his knowledge of cars. Then when I was lucky enough to take over the nighttime show, Tom became a fixture on with me late at night talking about cars. The auto show is a huge deal here in Chicago. If you've never seen it, what are you waiting for? It's great. So Tom will come on in just a little bit, and we'll talk about what you'll see at this year's auto show. Then another guest we've had on before, Ursula Bielski is her name. She's a paranormal. She will talk about the Valentine's Day Massacre. If you know the story, stick around. If you don't know the story, you're in for quite a treat. It's an incredible story, the Valentine's Day Massacre. We'll tell you what happened back then and how still today there are residual side effects to the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. So all that's coming up. Also, your chance to win some delicious food courtesy of Sweet Alley's. I'll tell you how that's going to break down in just a little bit. It's Bill Left, Wendy Snyder's celebrating a birthday over at Chuck E. Cheese's. She is out, but stay where you are. A lot more coming your way next on WGN. All right, it's me, it's Bill. Wendy is off for the rest of the day. It's her birthday. She'll be back on Monday. A couple of things. Number one, I just mentioned to you the fact that the Ice Festival has been canceled here in Chicago due to the cold. We got a text that said, don't forget, Bill, we are the city that closed its beaches because it was too hot. So, yeah, I guess it does balance out, doesn't it? Also talking about Matt Forte. Matt Forte was a Bear for the past, I want to say 8 years. I'm taking a look. Yeah.
Eight seasons, right?
8 seasons as a member of the Bears. The Bears are not re-signing him. He'll become a free agent. And
is this good news for you? Because now you can watch him play?
You know what? I'm torn on this because I, as much as I want to like the Bears, I love Matt Forte. I think he's the epitome of a perfect football player. He just really is. You can throw to him. You can hand off to him. He's just so good at what he does. And for the Bears to say we're going in a different direction to a guy that I think does everything right is very frustrating. And we've had a couple people here explain that I have to understand how the salary cap works. And I do, but if you look at other sports franchises, I'll use our own Blackhawks, for instance. There's a huge salary cap in hockey. The Blackhawks keep finding a way to win by getting the right personnel in. I don't know why the Bears can't figure out how to do something similar, but they just can't. 815 says, I would love to see Matt Forte on our team. I'm sorry he's leaving, probably become a Packer. Several of these actually hinted the fact that he may become a Green Bay Packer. 708 says, how many playoff games has Forte led us to? Not his fault. So totally not his fault. 847 says, it makes you wonder if Walter Payton was alive and had his career with the Bears, if they would have kept him or let him go. Here's another one. Matt Forte, our green and gold in his future. I agree, says 847. I can't support a poor product like the Bears. I'm tired of watching the same bad movie over and over. It doesn't matter. Yeah, it's sad. They just can't seem to figure out how to balance. I don't understand why. Steve, if you'll indulge me, you told me about a story before the show today that is now hitting most of the big websites. It's on BuzzFeed. It's on Huffington Post. And that's about Ted Cruz and a campaign ad. Can you explain? I have the story in front of me, but explain what you said to me, and then I'll preface it with the rest of the. I'll finish off with the rest of the story.
Well, Ted Cruz is, you know, he's a conservative Christian.
Right.
It served him very well in Iowa, not so well in New Hampshire, and it should serve him well again in South Carolina.
Yeah.
So he is engaged in sort of trying to eliminate Marco Rubio's threat. You know, Rubio had a disappointing show in New Hampshire, and he created this negative ad about Marco Rubio, and it's two people in. The guy I think says, well, I voted for this Tea Party champion, but as soon as he was elected, he went to Washington and started getting cozy with Chuck Schumer, and what a disappointment, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then a woman comes on and says, well, maybe next time, and I'm paraphrasing, but, well, maybe next time you'll vote for something more than just a pretty face.
Right.
Meaning Marco Rubio's kind of a shell. Well, BuzzFeed or someone reported earlier today that it turns out this actress was actually has an acting career involving soft porn porn movies.
Right,
so
right.
She'd been a soft, they're referring to her as a star. I don't know. when that.
What constitutes a star in the soft porn business?
But she was a soft porn actress. And so here's Cruz, you know, trying to be, you know, if you'll express, you know, maybe the phrase holier than thou. And he's got a soft porn actress.
Is that meant to be as dirty as it sounded? I don't know what that means.
All right. I don't know, but it's just kind of delicious.
Yes.
And you know, in his defense, he said, look, we hired a company to make it. This woman responded to an open casting call, and we didn't vet her and all of that. And so
here's what it says here. The actress in question is a woman named Amy Lindsay, who describes herself as a Christian conservative. You can be a Christian conservative and still do softcore porn.
Or having had done softcore porn.
Right. Right. She describes herself as a Christian conservative and a Republican. This in an interview with BuzzFeed. She also tweeted her displeasure that the video has been pulled from the airwaves. Well, it's a job for, I mean, they'll pay her regardless. She went and worked, so they're going to pay her.
Would she get paid every time it was on?
No.
Probably not.
I doubt it.
No.
I'd be shocked by that. Here's what she tweeted earlier. Extremely disappointed that the Ted Cruz campaign pulled the national television spot that I had a role in. Cruz's campaign spokesperson Tyler, said that the woman, Amy Lindsay, had responded to, as Steve said, an open casting call for the ad. Unfortunately, she was not vetted by the production company. Had the campaign known of her full filmography, we obviously would not have let her appear in the ad.
So, you know, a couple things. Obviously, it's not his fault.
It's not his fault.
She's just a nameless actress,
sort of.
And so you've got that. But the other is like, I want to know the savvy reporter who recognized her.
Well, I can't figure out what. So was it a reporter or was it somebody with Marco Rubio's campaign? Do we know for sure?
I don't know. It's someone who watches a lot of movies, though, probably.
But okay, that's a given. But it really shows how, I guess, how deep this thing goes. Again, no softcore jokes, please.
No, that wouldn't be.
But it shows how somebody's always looking for something, some in to go.
You have no idea the potholes you're facing.
Right. An internet movie database page in Amy Lindsay's name. Again, that's the actress who appears in this Ted Cruz video, which is meant, if everything went properly, meant to hurt Marco Rubio, but now it's ending up biting Ted Cruz instead. An internet movie database page in Lindsay's name lists her as appearing in several movies with titles like, and Steve, tell me if you've seen any of these. I haven't seen any of these. Did you see Carnal Wishes?
Carnal Wishes?
Yeah.
No,
not
I saw
Carmel.
No, okay. I'd seen Colonel Wishes.
That was a good movie. I saw that one.
It's about the history of popcorn.
What about Insatiable Desire? Did you ever see that one?
I did see that.
That was a good film.
It was a good movie.
Pretty good movie. She's also listed as having appeared in the TV series Star Trek Voyager.
Okay.
That's impressive.
They hired her.
Yeah, they liked her. And then in the 1996 film adaptation of Henry James's novel, The Portrait of a Lady. Again, so she's got a well-rounded. Lindsay's acting background was first reported by The Daily Caller. An ad titled Conservatives Anonymous featured a fake self-help session in which voters lamented their past support for Rubio. That's the exact thing that Steve was telling you about. I voted for a guy who was a Tea Party hero on the campaign trail before he went to D.C., and then I played patty cake with Chuck Schumer and cut a deal on amnesty. All right, so here's a side question to all of this. And it, you know, it's certainly up to them. It's up to Ted Cruz's campaign whether or not they want the ad to go away. And they obviously do because this looks bad for them,
right,
and what they're selling. Who decided to turn the switch on Marco Rubio all of a sudden? Normally, would everybody gang up on the guy who's in third place? What happened that made all the other candidates go, we got to take somebody down and it's going to be third place?
Well, I think, you know, everyone's wondering who's going to come up to challenge Trump.
Yeah.
So the candidates, by and large, aren't, I mean, they are too a little bit, but they're not focusing on Trump yet. They're focused on making sure they're the only one other than Trump.
Yeah.
So Rubio was on the rise. They decided we can't have him. You know, had Rubio done well in New Hampshire after doing well in Iowa, everyone would have said, well, these other people should get out of the race because Rubio's the guy who can challenge
sure.
him. So if you take him down, then you're still in the running. Sort
but
of.
We haven't seen that with John Kasich. He did really well in New Hampshire, but I haven't seen there hasn't been a swell to jump on him at any point. Has there been?
No, I don't think they. I don't think they're
not taking
of
it
him.
Seriously.
I mean, he didn't have a lot invested in South Carolina. In fact, he's not even going to spend a lot of time there. He is now going to be spending a lot of time in Michigan with their primary upcoming. So, see, he's sort of hopscotching. You know, trying to win where he can.
And that's a normal tactic, right? You go to the places you think you'll play better.
Well, I don't know if it is, but by this time, you know, you pretty much, most of the candidates will be all in. They'll be competing everywhere. And, you know, he's going to be on the ballot in South Carolina,
sure.
but he's not going to spend much of his time there.
Although it's weird because you would think with the momentum of New Hampshire, even though it's a very different animal, you'd think
right.
how much more advantageous would this for him to be if he got two big second place finishes in a row.
To me, and I think I said this with you guys yesterday, but it's the cool thing is we're a big country and we're very different in different parts of our country.
Yeah, sure.
We tend to think of us all alike, you know, so that's what I like, that he couldn't get traction in Iowa, but he could in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
South Carolina aren't his people, but Michigan might be.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just the way it's going to play out.
That's the pattern. All right. All right, thanks, Steve. Here's what we'll do. We'll take a quick break. Steve will give you the news, and then we'll chat with Tom Appel about the auto show. Stay here. It's Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder has the rest of the day off, and it's WGN. Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff with you here on WGN. It's Wendy's birthday, so she has the rest of the day off. She'll be back on Monday. My friend Tom Appel joins us right now. Tom is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive, also the editor of CG Daily Drive. .com. If you want to know anything about cars, good or bad, it's in those two websites. Tom, thank you for being here.
Oh, my pleasure.
Greatly appreciate it. You are genuinely excited by what you've seen at the auto show, huh?
The mothership has called me home.
It's that good, huh?
This is God's birthday present to me every year.
All right, let's walk through some of the highlights.
Yeah.
Who, in your opinion, of everything you saw, and you were there last night and again today.
Yeah.
Right? Who is just hands down? Is there somebody who's just the best this year?
Wow, who is
that's
the
best? Hard to say.
You know what's kind of cool this year? Cadillac has again redone its site.
Yeah,
its place at the show. It's very clean and very simple,
mm-hmm.
and I would argue very luxury oriented and very elegant.
But you would expect that nice. From Cadillac, wouldn't you? That's not a surprise.
You
is
would.
It?
I think in the past they've had sort of monolithic things going on. It kind of looked big and maybe overdone.
Yeah.
Now it's classy.
They streamlined it a little bit and got it right. Is there a car in particular from Cadillac that you were most excited about?
You know what's fun there right now is the. ATS-V.
Yeah.
That's the little caddy stuffed full of turbocharged V6 goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's fun.
Who among the car dealers, of the car companies, I should say, who's trying the most to reinvent themselves? Is there somebody who's really said, all right, we've tried one direction, now we want to do this?
Hyundai's got something interesting going on. I think everyone knows who Hyundai is.
Yeah.
And Hyundai has two cars in its lineup, the Genesis and the Equus,
yeah.
which are large near luxury and luxury rear-wheel drive cars, and they're sort of making a play for European luxury cars
yeah.
With mixed success. They've decided that Genesis now is going to become a brand new brand, so it's an all
on its
brand.
Own.
Yeah, yeah. They're going to sell eventually seven different products under the Genesis banner. Now, unlike Acura, which came from Honda, and Lexus that came from Toyota, and Infiniti that came from Nissan, they're not going to go with separate stores. So this is where this is an interesting experiment. These Genesis outlets will be inside existing Hyundai stores, But they'll have their own little areas and their separate salesmen.
What's in it for Hyundai to do something that dramatic? Why would they do that?
I think because they want to move up market, and they can't do it with the Hyundai name.
We've already branded it. We know what Hyundai means, and this is a chance to kind of reinvent themselves.
Yeah, Hyundai is so closely associated with value.
Yeah, right.
I think that you can't sell luxury products under that banner. So Genesis is now a separate brand.
Yeah. Everybody was excited a couple years ago about the reemergence of muscle cars, and that doesn't seem to be going away. Was that as prominent this year as it's been in the last couple?
It is for a couple of reasons. One thing, Chrysler, which is now part of FCA, Fiat Chrysler Automobiles, has a test track at the auto show.
Yeah.
So you're going to want to get in line right away in the morning when you get there. But one of the things they're doing is taking people for drag strip rides. So you get in the car, and it's
really
way shorter than... Yeah, I don't know how long it is, but it's indoor, it's loud, and it's fun to see. It's completely over the top. So they're taking people for rides, and they're just full throttle from a stop runs for, I don't know how far it is, maybe a little bit short of an eighth of a mile. It's ridiculous. It's
how
cool.
How fast are they going on this?
They must be getting 80 miles an hour.
Are they really?
Yeah, maybe 70.
And just to be clear, with the test drives, you don't get to drive it. You get to sit in the passenger seat or the back seat while they drive.
Yeah, because at some point that would end badly. It would almost have to.
How long were the lines for this?
Well, they haven't opened up yet.
Oh, so they haven't?
Yeah, I haven't seen the lines.
But it's going to be big.
It'll be popular. It's got to be popular.
All right, go through some of the other things that really got your attention there at the auto show. What'd you like?
You know what I liked is that Nissan... had made a large truck play a couple of years ago. They brought up the Titan pickup, and they had an Armada large SUV based on that.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of which quite hit the target. They never sold well, and maybe didn't quite match the competition. They just brought out a new Titan pickup. We're learning about that as we speak, but they brought out a new crossover, not a crossover, but large SUV called the Armada again. And this is based on an international product called the Patrol. And it's kind of a cool vehicle.
Is the Patrol? Where would we see that prior to now in the U.S.?
Pan-Asian markets and like Saudi Arabia.
Yeah,
it's kind of a cool, it's a legitimate like sort of desert crawler vehicle.
Yeah.
Luxed up for the U.S., but that'll be on sale soon, and that's at the show, and that's well worth a look.
You like that. All right, gas prices have been nice and low of late.
They have.
Is that reflective at all in what you're seeing? You know, because you hear terms like gas guzzler, and people have been leery to buy bigger vehicles because of the price of gas. But now that the price is down, does that get reflected there at the auto show?
I think there might be just a little bit more emphasis on performance, but no one is going to commit. No manufacturer is going to commit to product. Like, they're not going to build bigger, heavier vehicles.
Those days are gone.
Yeah, it's just it would be a dangerous play.
Yeah. All right, texts are starting to come in for you, and you can call in or text in at 312-981-7200. Leo says, by way of text, on an eighth of a mile track, you're only getting up to 55 to 60 miles per hour at the very most.
I don't know.
Are they? I bet they could go faster if they really wanted
to. There used to be something called eighth mile racing. I know nothing about it.
Yeah.
I don't know how much space they have on this track. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
So Leo could be right.
815 says, what do you think of the new Mazda Miata? Did they bring back the Mazda Miata?
And it's at the show.
Really?
Yeah, Miata was redesigned. Was redesigned for 2016. It's at the show. It is a delight to drive. It's as much fun as it's ever been. Got some crispy new lines. It looks like the new Mazda. Additionally, it shares its platform with a new Fiat, the Fiat 124, and that's at the show as well.
What? No, take me through the paces of why, because the Miata was always kind of a highly regarded car, but it went away. What was the decision like to bring it back? What happened?
Well, it never actually went away. Just sales slowed down,
and
Mazda stopped promoting it, partly because it was just very low volume.
But they've been making it for years?
For
really?
Years, yeah. Oh, there was never really a break in the manufacturing. One of the things that happens, too, is when a product that doesn't sell that well is on an individual platform, it's going to languish for a while because there's not a lot of money in it. It's more of a halo car.
Yeah.
So for the last few years, it hasn't been promoted, hasn't been talked about. At its peak, it sold about 30,000 units a year.
Oh, that's not many, is it?
Not for a major manufacturer.
No. What was the Honda car that had was it the Del Sol that had the snap-off top?
Yeah. Yeah, the Del Sol sort of replaced what was called the CRX.
Yeah.
In their lineup, but it was a sporty little two-seat thing. And it had, a Targa-style roof where there was a single panel you could remove.
Right.
And get something close to a convertible.
Right. Somebody had a car, you'll know this, I can't think of who's putting this out. It looks like a convertible, but it's not a convertible because it doesn't have a top. Do you know what I'm referring to? Does that make sense? I saw it on TV a couple of nights ago, and I thought to myself, that could definitely work in a warm weather situation like California or Florida, but I can't imagine anyone in Chicago buying a car that just out and out doesn't have a top to it?
Top of mind, I can't think of what that might
no
be.
No one was showing that at the show?
Not that I saw.
All right. It could exist. We just don't know.
I'm sure it does exist.
All right. Here's another Miata call, or a text, I should say. 708 says, my Miata is 21 years old this year, and I'm super excited that there's a new one. Here's one, 219 says, are there any reviews in yet for the new Buick Avista?
No, not yet.
What is the Buick Avista? I don't know that one at all.
The Avista actually may not be produced. That was a coupe show car from Detroit. I think that's at the Chicago show. Beautiful car. But it's a large-ish coupe.
Yeah.
And actually, it's a smallish coupe. Forgive me. It's based on the Camaro chassis. But that may not see production.
So this is considered in the bracket of concept cars at this point? And when something like this is, they put it all through concept stages and then it isn't produced, that's based on what exactly? Why wouldn't they produce it?
It ends up being a styling exercise. So what they do is they put it out there and they want to gauge just general reaction to the look. Is this a direction we want to go?
Yeah.
And if you like that car, Buick did just roll out the Cascada, which is a small convertible. Mm-hmm. It looks a lot like that.
Oh, does it? All right.
A little bit smaller and maybe not as ambitious. But
still with a back seat.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right, if you have any questions or comments for Tom Appel, we're at 312-981-7200. We'll take those calls in just a little bit. It's Bill Left. Wendy Snyder has the rest of the day off, and it's WGN. It's Bill Left along with Tom Appel. Tom is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive and the editor of cgdailydrive.com. Several people on the text line, many people, saw what I saw the other night on TV. One person said, Bill, I saw that same car that you asked about. It was a tealish color. It was. I was just telling you, Tom, off air, that they were going for like a 60s vibe, much like Mini Cooper has a dated look. That's what they were going for. Somebody said that they've seen the car, and it's called the new Ted Cruz. And they spelled that C-R-U-I-S-E. I'm pretty sure that's incorrect. Here's one. I don't know if you'll know the answer to this. How does the new Ford app work? Is there a new Ford app that you're aware of?
I don't know exactly. There are Ford apps, plural, so I don't know which one they're talking about. But there is an app that allows you to keep tabs on your kids and certain Ford vehicles.
In what capacity? How would that work?
You can limit. You can keep track of range, how far they drive. You can limit the volume of the radio and keep track of speeds traveled.
I like all that.
Yeah.
Is there a way to make sure that they can't use their cell phones to text or talk while they're driving? Because that's the one I want more than anything.
Actually, I think there is. At least for you not to do that through the MyFord Touch program.
Really?
Yeah.
All right, that's not a bad idea. All right, there's several people on the line. We're at 312-981-7200 if you'd like to talk to Tom Appel about cars and the car show. Let's start out with Bob. Hey, Bob, how are you?
Hello.
Hi, go ahead. Did you have a question for Tom?
Yeah, I was wondering, I guess out in California or something, a couple of years ago, they had a kit for basically a Camaro that was coming out with the Trans Am. Are we ever going to see the Trans Am again, the GMC?
No, the Trans Am was a Pontiac property, and Pontiac was discontinued in 2009 and 2010. I doubt we'll see that name. But, yeah, I have seen aftermarket conversions for the Camaro with seriously mixed results.
Really?
Okay. Yeah,
I'm not sure they look like
Pontiacs. The pictures were nice.
Oh, if they look nice, I mean, I'm sure they exist, and I've seen pictures. You can do it.
Okay.
You can make your Camaro look like a Pontiac if you want to.
Sorry about the bad news, Bob. You know, it's funny because that name Trans Am, it holds something to us. We love the thought of the Trans Am. Somebody couldn't reinvent it a little bit and buy the name somehow? Is that a possibility?
Well, the name actually was purchased.
It was.
It was a racing series in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
Really popular.
Yeah.
And that name could, in fact, be used again by someone else.
We want to see more eagle decals on our cars, Tom. That's what we want as a people.
Absolutely.
I want that. Yeah. All right, let's go to Carl. He has a question for you. Carl, go ahead. You're on with Tom Appel.
Yeah, hi, gentlemen. Just came in from the warm weather outside. Happened to recognize Tom's voice from Steve and Johnny from Wigan.
Sure.
How you doing, Tom?
I'm good, thanks.
Hello, Bill, as well. Listen, just a quick question. A friend of mine is considering, and correct me if I'm right or wrong, Mercedes-Benz, is there a C63 coupe that maybe a 16 or a 17?
Yes.
If you have any thoughts on that?
Haven't driven it. It looks awesome, and it's probably awesome. It's also probably very expensive.
Yeah.
I would think so, yeah.
Yeah, it's strictly a two-passenger vehicle. There is a rear seat, but it'll be nearly useless, and it'll be completely a blast to drive.
Gotcha.
Thanks, Carl.
I'll pass it on, gentlemen. Stay warm.
Okay, you too. Thanks.
Yeah.
Talk about that rear seat that is unusable, basically unusable. The purpose of that is what exactly?
A couple of things. Some people just won't buy a car that doesn't have a rear seat.
Yeah.
It just makes the thing a no deal. Additionally, insurance costs sometimes go up for two-seaters.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, like the Porsche 911 has a rear seat for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know who you'd hit enough to stick back there.
If you're driving around with Mr. Pretzel or something and you want to put him in the back, it's easy to do. What about, I keep reading about what they're calling the affordable, and then they're snickering, the affordable Tesla.
Right.
It is less money than the Teslas we've seen in the past, but it's still kind of an expensive car, isn't it?
Well, the affordable Tesla is the Model 3, and that's due later this year. And the points they're looking for are 200 miles of range and $35,000. Those are the promised Elon Musk-endorsed ranges.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what comes of that. Right now, they're having a hard time delivering the crossover they just launched, the Model X.
Because? Any specific reason?
Presumably, manufacturing issues.
Oh, all right.
Having to do with the weird gullwing doors.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And speaking of gullwing doors, did I read this right? Somebody's reinventing the DeLorean. Is that a possibility?
Somebody is going to start rebuilding those. Yeah, there's a company that will put together one from old pieces.
Yeah.
And now what they're going to do is put a modern engine and driveline in it.
Could that be a hit?
I don't think it'll be a big hit.
But a cult favorite.
Yeah, it would be really hard to make that car feel modern.
Yeah,
it's
bet.
It's a very old car.
Yeah, yeah. The DeLorean came out in 1980s?
It was early 80s.
82, 83 maybe?
Yeah.
Let's talk to Kathy. Kathy, hi, you're on with Tom Appel. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Tom. You were talking about the Chrysler test drag race, and I just wanted to let you know my husband actually did that a couple weekends ago in Arizona at the Barrett Jackson auction. And you get up to about, they floor it, they go 60 miles an hour in about 3 seconds, and then they got to slam on the brakes.
So it's a good solid 0 to 60 run. Well, that's fun.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Kathy. Yeah. Have a good weekend.
Sure.
Take
okay,
care. Tom, you wrote something recently that I wanted you to comment on. I love this. This is a beautiful piece of nostalgia. The strangest looking vehicles of 1986.
Yes.
Is there a reason you chose 1986?
Only because all three of those vehicles were there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And the 80s were a treasure trove of automotive weirdness. And and I love these cars.
Go through them with me. What are we seeing? I know number one is a Nissan, right?
Yeah, the Nissan Stanza Wagon, which is a... It looks to me like a backdrop from a Bond film. It could be a shuttle vehicle in Moonraker.
Right, right.
And it's actually a super functional vehicle. It's sort of a high station wagon with sliding side doors, but there isn't a curve on that vehicle.
It's a little on the boxy side.
Yeah, a little bit.
It really is. And how long did the Nissan Stanza Wagon last? It didn't last long, did it?
Like two model years.
That's about it, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, another on the list is the 86, the Mercur. Is that how you say that?
Mercur.
Mercur.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the XR4 Ti.
Yeah.
Again, shaped unfortunately, right? Is that fair?
Yeah, there's a couple of weird elements to it. The front end is almost completely flush. So the headlights end up looking a little bit like bug eyes, and there's no grill. It's an awesome look, and I kind of like it. But the really weird part was the twin plane rear deck.
Mm-hmm.
Which looks like something off a very old airplane, and it's a little incongruous with the rest of the car.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense when you see it. And then the third one that you list is the Nissan Stanza Wagon that had the bottom of it had stripes that say 19. It doesn't literally say 1986, but when you see it, you can look at it and go, that looks like the year 1986.
That's about the time striking started to show up on the bottom of a car, and
yeah.
I don't know what that was about.
Yeah. One more car question I have for you. During the Super Bowl and then in subsequent days, I keep seeing more ads for Jaguar. That's the way I pronounce it. But they used to call it Jaguar, and now they pronounce it an even different way, which is Jaguar.
Like
that.
Yeah.
Why do they keep pronouncing it that way? And the football team says Jaguars, so who's right?
I think if we say Jaguar, people will talk about how we talk about it.
But are they purposely messing with us because they keep changing the pronunciation and none of them are right, I don't think.
I think they're trying to figure out just how obedient the media is.
It works.
Yeah.
It works. All right. Tell us what you have coming up on the websites. What's coming up at both of your fine websites?
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. Right now we have all of our Chicago Auto Show coverage is up right now, and that's at the CG Daily Drive blog.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't decided what I'm writing yet, but I'll put up something I promise will be funny on Monday.
And you're going back, aren't you? You're
I'm
not
going
done.
Back now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Going back now.
It's just that good. There's that much to see and do, isn't
there?
Oh,
it's awesome. Yeah, you could walk around it forever.
And remind me now, it runs now through when exactly?
It opens tomorrow at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
And it runs through next Sunday evening.
Oh, it's just press now.
Yep.
Opens tomorrow, and then, like you said, it goes
public
through Sunday.
Tomorrow. Yeah, and if you go, absolutely download the app.
It's okay.
Two cool things. One, you get a map, which is super useful.
Mm-hmm.
And two, you get registered to win a Buick Encore.
That wouldn't be bad.
Why wouldn't you do it?
That would not be bad.
Free app.
Read Tom Appel's work at Consumer Guide Automotive and also cgdailydrive.com. Thank you. Great to see you.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it, Tom. A break, some news, and then more show coming your way next. It's Bill Leff on WGN. All right, let's talk a little bit about the St. Valentine's Day Massacre and how you can see the site. Ursula Bielski joins me right now, an author, an expert on the paranormal, the owner of ChicagoHauntings.com. Ursula, how are you? Thank you very much for being here.
I'm very cold, but excellent.
It's a little bit on the cold side. I'm not going to lie to you.
Just a little bit.
I apologize for that. As soon as the show's over, I'm going to go.
Not in here, outside.
No, it's freezing outside. The city should have a giant thermostat somewhere where when it gets this cold, we just all work together and move it a little to the left or the right adjust it. All right, we'll get that taken care of. St. Valentine's Day and the massacre is a huge deal in the world of the paranormal. For people who don't know the story, let's go through some of the paces of what took place exactly for that St. Valentine's Day massacre.
Yeah, well, this was a blustery cold morning in February of 1929. Mm-hmm. And this was in a little garage on Clark Street, probably the most infamous address in crime history, mm-hmm. 2122 North Clark Street.
That and the Biograph Theater, I guess, would be the other one, right? Those would be the big two, right?
Yes, right. Absolutely. Both Chicago spots in Lincoln Park.
Yep.
So this was a hangout of Bugs Moran, you know, who was in charge of the Northside Irish Gang. And he had gone, you know, a lot of people don't realize that he and Capone had really gone neck and neck for this entire generation of Prohibition. You know, it wasn't like Capone was always the big guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were going neck and neck every day for control of this turf and in the illegal distribution and sale of alcohol in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And so Bugs Moran lived right around the corner from there, and every morning he would show up like clockwork to hang out with his cronies at this little garage, the SMC Cartage Company, and this was a garage where whiskey trucks would be worked on, and they would take, you know, deliveries to different speakeasies. And
so by worked on, do you mean like crafted right there or just supplied so they could be sent out? What did they do?
Yeah, and there were, you know, and they would be worked on. I mean, they would be fixed.
Yeah.
You know, there was famously the mechanic's dog was tied up or chained up in the garage that day, Highball, German Shepherd, who witnessed the whole thing. And he's believed to be one of the actual kind of associated with the hauntings of the location today.
Yeah.
So, you know, Moran would show up there every morning, and that day he was famously late, 7.5 minutes, because he had cut himself shaving.
Yeah.
So when he arrived, he saw that there appeared to be a squad car outside of the building. And so he turned around and he went to the coffee shop on the corner. It's a hot dog stand today.
Yeah.
And waited for this, what he thought was a raid, to pass. You know, very common thing in that day. But what this was four of Capone's men that had been sent in there. Two were dressed as police officers and two in plain clothes with long coats on. And they had been actually staking out the place for weeks from a boarding house across the street. At that time, Lincoln Park was mostly boarding houses, rooming houses.
Yeah.
It wasn't a great neighborhood at that time.
Yeah.
And a lot of people who lived in the neighborhood worked for Moran, you know, young single guys. So they had been watching the comings and goings of Moran for weeks, and they had, you know, one job, which was to finally off Moran. And we still to this day really don't know who the gunmen were in the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. There's probably 1,000 different versions of, you know, the suspects, mm-hmm. and millions, you know, of people that have written or talked about their ideas about it.
But is that one of those things that they say is, it's not solved because they didn't want it to be solved, that maybe the police were a little soft on the investigation, possibly?
There's a lot of that, because, of course, everyone was in bed together at that
time. Yeah, I would imagine.
Unlike now, of course.
No, it doesn't happen today, but back then it was commonplace, sure.
So these four guys come in, and they find that there are 7 of Moran's men inside the place, and they ask which one is Moran. And, of course, none of them were,
right,
because he hadn't showed up yet. And so what they did was to follow Capone's orders. He said, I don't care who you get Moran.
Yeah.
So they lined the seven guys up against the rear north wall, famously, of the garage. And the two so-called plainclothesmen took Tommy guns out from under their coats. And they sprayed the seven men three times in three sweeps, first across their foreheads, back across their chests, and then back across their stomachs. Two of the guys were still alive after this.
After all
these
that.
Are tough guys.
Yeah.
And they were supposedly finished off with shotgun blasts to their heads. The dog, the German Shepherd, Highball, began barking and howling and crying. Mm-hmm. And he eventually got the woman who owned the boarding house next door, which is still there today, the beautiful building next door, to come over and see what was wrong with the dog. And she found what had happened. And when she called the police and they arrived, they found one of the guys still alive, crawling for the door to try and get out.
Yeah, right.
And eventually he was questioned, who did this? Who shot you? And he said, nobody. I ain't shot. These were hardcore,
yeah, I guess.
Non-snitching people back then.
Remind me, what was Moran's retaliation after this? Did he do anything to Capone?
It was amazing because Moran really fell into back into like small-time street thug crime. This was not only the worst thing that Chicagoans or Americans had seen. I mean, you know, this was, we're no stranger to death and murder. This is the home of A.J. Tomes, crying out loud,
right.
You know. But this was the worst thing that anyone had ever seen in the United States that was done for business.
Yeah.
And it was the
it
last.
It got national attention. Everybody in the country was aware of this.
People had enough, you know, probably hundreds of young men had been killed, like the drug wars
today.
Right,
right.
People were fed up and sick of it. So this was not only the beginning of the end of Prohibition, but it was also the beginning. I mean, it was the beginning of Al Capone, the way we know him today,
right,
as the most infamous gangster of all time. This was when he came into that role.
Right.
Only on this day. But it was also short-lived because he was, you know, a marked man after that. And everyone had just had enough.
Is it true, from everything I've read and what I've seen in television shows and movies, that despite the fact that these guys were cold-blooded killers, there was still some sort of an affection for guys like Al Capone and Bugs Moran, that for some reason the public, despite what they had the possibility of doing to people, just shredding them, there was still some sort of a love between the general public and these gangsters?
Well, there were all of these relationships that they had forged with so many people.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, they were giving people what they couldn't get anywhere else that they desperately wanted. They wanted alcohol, and these were the people that were providing it.
Yeah.
But they also had these very benevolent relationships with so many local business owners and such. And, you know, and like Al Capone was known as this great guy to so many people. And I hear stories all the time just from people on the tours and such that say my grandfather drove for Al Capone, or he was a waiter for Al Capone or one of his valets, and he was the nicest guy and he was so generous. So people have these very conflicting memories today. Even.
Isn't that something? Ursula Bielski is here, founder of Chicago Hauntings, Inc. The website you want to visit is chicagohauntings.com. We'll tell you how you can get a tour and how the paranormal side of this all comes into effect next. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. You can call us there. You can text us there. It's Bill F. on WGN. It's Bill F. Wendy has the rest of the day off because it's her birthday. Ursula Bielski is here, founder of Chicago Hauntings, Inc. You can learn more at chicagohauntings.com. You know this stuff inside out. When something bad happens, Ursula, like the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, in your opinion, what happens to that space, to that building, to the aura of where something horrible has happened?
It's interesting. There's so many theories about what happens to create hauntings or ghosts. And there's as many theories as there are paranormal investigators, I guess. But one of the main ones is that there is kind of an emotional imprint that's left behind. And we call this a residual haunting. And so this is something that people visiting the area may be able to pick up on for generations to come, even hundreds of years, depending on how severe the event was and how sensitive the people are that are are visiting. So we see all kinds of things ranging from replays of these kind of events where we're actually kind of watching a video.
I was just going to say, with a replay, I don't know, I'm sure you're aware of the show Dark Shadows from the soap opera from the 1960s. I remember there was a room that I can't remember what they called it on Dark Shadows, but when a certain girl would go into the room, she would see horrible things that had happened in that room from years before. So it's the same concept, huh?
It is. And, you know, one of the most important things about the history of these locations is the actual physical environment. One of the most famous stories about the St. Valentine's Day Massacre is that the bricks of the actual building that became souvenirs for people have this energy attached to them. Some people say they're cursed, but other people say that they have this energy attached to them. I actually have one of them on my mantle at home. But these, we call this the stone tape theory. This is a theory that takes its name from this mini series that was released in Britain in the 1970s. And it was about this group of paranormal investigators that was doing an investigation in this old location. And they came to discover that the events of the past had actually sort of imprinted themselves on the bricks and the stones of the building. And so the stone tape theory is something that a lot of investigators talk about today, believing that the actual buildings and the stones, the actual materials, become sort of like a conduit.
They absorb it somehow.
Yeah, exactly. And you can, it's like watching a videotape or listening to an audio file when you hear things or see things. And so that's one of the big theories. Of course, there's also the traditional ghosty theories that people died so suddenly that they weren't expecting it. And so they don't know that they're dead. So they're still there. In Chicago, one of the big things that we always talk about is the fact that these locations where these enormous tragedies happened do not, for the most part, have any evidence of commemoration at them. The site where the St. Valentine's Day Massacre happened, vacant lot now, it's a little parking lot next to a City of Chicago senior residence. And this is deliberate. Richard J. Daley, our former mayor, have the city buy that property so that no one would ever be able to make a tourist attraction there.
It's a black mark to some extent, and it glorifies the days of organized crime.
Yeah, he went through the city during his tenure and he tore down every building that had anything to do with Capone, including the Lexington Hotel, beautiful Lexington Hotel at Cermak in Michigan, where he had his offices. Tore down, you know, the Four Deuces, where he had his first job when he came to Chicago from New York. This, of course, the site of St. Valentine's Day Massacre was number one on the list. We'll get rid of it. People will forget that this stuff happened and will not hear about it or talk about it anymore. But ghost hunters know as soon as you do that, it's the easiest recipe to get ghosts to come around is to not talk about what happened to them.
There's similarities. You and I have spoken about the area where the Eastland disaster took place and then where they kept the bodies afterwards. Is it the same kind of a feel of kind of unresolved ghosts still inhabiting that area, trying to find answers for themselves? Do you chalk it up to that?
It is. There are still, you know, people that live in the old rooming house where the woman owned that discovered the massacre at first. That's high-end condos now.
Yeah.
And people in those buildings and also some of the seniors in the high-rise often come out during our tours and tell us about the things that they experienced there. And these range from seeing figures kind of wandering around the area. They talk about as figures in suits and hats that look like they've lost something. They're
could it be drunk Cub fans? Do you think it could be? It could be, right?
It could be. I don't think they'd be that well dressed.
No, maybe not. All right.
But
I don't know. By the playoffs, people were starting to dress up
a little bit.
So
that's
maybe
true. Well, you had to. In October. You had to have money to get those tickets.
Do they have to disclose? I know when you're selling a property where something horrible has happened, you have to disclose that. Now, with something like the St. Valentine's Day Massacre that was so many years ago, if you were trying to get a room in that, would you have to say, oh, by the way, right over there, that's where the St. Valentine's Day Massacre
was? If it did not
was?
Happen actually in your property, no.
Then you don't.
Yeah, I did a whole segment of this for a local news show a few years ago when we had gone to the Speck apartments where Richard Speck had killed the nurses.
Oh, that's eerie.
We had gone to the John Wayne Gacy home site. We had gone into the actual apartment where Herons had killed his first victim on Pine Grove Avenue, where he had written on the wall with lipstick. And, you know, there was a big court case in New York some years ago that was the first time this was brought into court where you have to disclose some, you know, that it's a blighted property.
Is that how they term it?
Blighted property? Yeah. The most recent in Chicago, the most recent instance of that is the Hudson House in Englewood where Jennifer Hudson's family was killed. So, you do have to do it now. And that's funny, in New Orleans now, though, a lot of the realtors will put haunted or not haunted on the placards outside of the properties that are for sale, because a lot of people like that.
They want to buy a haunted house.
Right.
Wow. All right. So when somebody takes this particular tour, the St. Valentine's Day tour, what exactly do you show them? What do they get to see?
Yeah, well, we have two tours, and they're both tomorrow, Saturday, the 13th, and one of them is our 3 o'clock afternoon tour. This is the Gothic Chicago tour, and it is our special Guns N' Roses version of our kind of dark history tour on Saturday afternoons, and it departs from the Congress Plaza Hotel, very storied old place where Al Capone used to play cards every Friday night, and very famously, there were phone calls back and forth between rooms at the Congress Plaza Hotel on the night of the St. Valentine's Day massacre.
To check the progress of what was happening? What do you think?
I don't know.
Nobody knows.
I don't know anything.
Were there texts? Did anyone check for texts? He was an innovator.
Maybe.
People don't know that about him. All right, so you get to see the it starts at the Congress.
Right, it starts at the Congress. And both of the tours on Saturday, the 3 o'clock Gothic Chicago tour and our Shots in the Dark pub crawl at 6 o'clock, also from the Congress. These are all both tours that go to sites of, you know, Chicago's Valentine's Day passion, Valentine's Day Chicago style. So these are not only sites like the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, Holy Name Cathedral, which still has bullet holes in the cornerstone from shootouts. But also sites where love has gotten very, very bad in Chicago history. You know, we talk about Resurrection Mary, Chicago's, you know, ill-fated dance partner who cannot find rest after all of these years. We talk about the woman in red who jumped off the roof of the Drake Hotel on opening night in 1920 because she found her fiancé in the arms of someone else at the big New Year's Eve party. So these are all Valentine's stories, Chicago style.
This is
love
great.
And crime gone bad.
This is great. All right, if people want more information, Ursula, or to book one of the tours, they want to go to ChicagoHauntings.com. That's the best move.
Yeah, you can find the links to the Gothic Chicago tours. That's the 3 p.m. tour tomorrow, and also to our 6 p.m. pub crawl, both from the Congress Hotel.
Tickets are going fast, so if you want in on this, do it now. Again, that's ChicagoHauntings.com. There's a 3 p.m. tour. There's a 6 p.m. tour. You're in charge of both.
Yeah, and both are BYOB. And we will have moonshine.
There will be moonshine. That's what I was going to ask.
Yes,
will there be
complimentary
moonshine?
Shots of moonshine.
That's what people
love tours.
Everyone loves moonshine. Ursula, thank you. Appreciate it. Have a great great time on the tours. We really appreciate you being here.
I'm wishing for the one I love.
Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff. It's Valentine's Day weekend, the weekend of love. Steve, you and Sharon have been married for how many years?
Almost our entire marriage.
Almost your whole marriage.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
I'm going to say 21 years.
About 21 years. Has there ever been some fight between the two of you? Let's not say fight. Let's say disagreement. Something that you just didn't see eye to eye on. That when you look back in retrospect, it's so ridiculous. There's no reason you guys ever battled about something. Was anything coming to mind?
A couple times where I turned out to be wrong, sure.
Yeah?
Right?
Yeah. I would say most of the disagreements that my wife and I have had, when I look back on them, they were all silly. Every one of them ridiculous, but she was right in pretty much all of them.
Right.
Don't you think? When you think about it, it's usually the wife that's right, normally.
I think that's, Lou Manfredini says, happy wife, happy life.
I've heard that before.
Yeah.
I've heard that before. What have you and your significant other fought about that when you think about it, it's just ridiculous? There's no reason to fight over things like this. 312-981-7200. We'll pick the two best. Whichever are the best, they will win a variety sampler pack of sweet and savory treats from Sweet Alley's, Chicagoland's only dedicated certified gluten-free bakery located in Hinsdale. You can also visit them online, Sweet Allies, A-L-I-S, sweetallies.com. Let's go to the phones and see who has had an argument that, when you look at it, just doesn't make that much sense. Kevin, it's you. How are you?
Hello.
Hey, Kevin. How's everything? Everything good?
Everything's great. When we first got married, the biggest argument that I can remember we ever had in our whole 32 years of marriage was which way the toilet paper.
Which way the toilet paper should go? Is that what you said?
The toilet paper, yeah. When you put the roll in the holder.
Yeah.
She likes it to go towards the wall.
Yeah.
And come over the top. And still to this day, whenever she puts the toilet paper in the roller, she puts it towards the wall. Drives me nuts.
So how deep did this argument go? Was there yelling? Was there screaming? Was there fighting? How deep did the argument go?
I you know what? I was a jerk when I first got married. I didn't know how to cohabitate with anybody. You know?
Yeah.
And I was adamant, and she was adamant too. So we just agreed to disagree and just went through life with the toilet paper. Whoever uses
sure.
the last roll puts it the way they want it.
That's what we call compromise, Kevin. That's perfect. You guys figured it out. Well, thank you very much. You're in the running.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good weekend. So that's Kevin and his wife who just battled over the obvious. Should the toilet paper come toward me or away from me? Let's see what Henry's fight was about. Hello, Henry.
Yes, good afternoon.
What did you fight over? What happened?
Well, on the surface, it's going to sound typical, but it got deeper. I had been dating somebody for several months. We had run 5Ks together. Everything was going great. And
yeah.
after she had stayed overnight a few times, she was complaining about her sore back and how she couldn't sleep at all because she had gone to sleep on the couch because of my snoring.
Oh.
So what made it stranger, though, is the fact that she made me feel as if I had done something illegal and I had been doing something extremely bad. And so I think that's what made the argument even fiercer, because I felt guilty and I was telling her, well, let me see what I can do to resolve this. Maybe I'll take some medication, what have you. But she just sounded totally disgusted, angry, and frustrated.
Do they have snoring? Is there snoring medication?
Well, not officially, not that I know of, but you know how they have the breathe right strip.
Oh, yeah, they do. They have that. All right. All right.
Yeah.
And Henry, please tell me you guys are still together. This didn't break you apart, did it?
Actually, it did.
Oh, it did. All right. Well, that's a much sadder ending than I had anticipated. All right.
Exactly. And the reason I'm laughing, though, is it goes back to the fact that she made it seem as if I had done something illegal and I had done something disgusting and I had a communicable disease and everything else all rolled into one.
That's awful. All right. Well, thank you for telling the story. And you, sir, will also be in the running. All right.
All right. Thank
you. All right. Take care. All right. Let me get another one in. Again, if you're just joining us, it's Valentine's Day. It's a time of love, but sometimes there's some friction. What is the strangest thing that you and your husband or wife or boyfriend or girlfriend have ever fought over? Let's check in with Roseanne and see what she has for us. Roseanne, what did you and your significant other fight over?
Well, the thing is, we really don't fight about things, but this one particular thing we do, and it's the Christmas tree. And I love a Christmas tree. I would like it up all year long.
Oh.
And he doesn't want to go through bringing it up, putting it up, taking it down, doing all that. So we just go back and forth with it. And this has been 44 years going back and forth, and we finally came to a compromise that it stays up till Valentine's Day, so I'm still sitting here looking at my Christmas tree.
But now, Roseanne, you understand it's called a Christmas tree, not an all-year-round tree. You know that.
But the trees are evergreen. That means they're always alive.
All right. That's true. Circle gets the square on that. Roseanne, you are in the running. We will put you in. You may be winning some Sweet Allies, all right?
Thank you.
All right, thank you very, very much. Now, when she said Christmas tree, I was trying to figure out if that meant colored lights or white lights, because my wife and I did have that battle at one time. But keeping up year-round seems like a long time to me. Let's see what George has for us. George, you're on WGN. You guys had a battle over something silly, you and your wife, I mean?
Yeah, I think, and it continues. It continues, it just gradually has gotten to a point where it's no big deal anymore, but we used to fight over who would cut the grass.
Oh.
Because she always wanted to cut the grass,
And I always wanted to cut the grass.
You guys want to cut the grass? I thought it would be the opposite of it's your job. No, it's your job.
She always wanted to cut the grass because it was a good form of exercise.
Yeah.
In a fairly large yard, walk behind mower.
Yeah.
But my neighbors, my fellow males around, you know, the neighborhood would always give me grief that I had my wife out there cutting the grass. I actually have a picture of her the day before our son was born.
Yeah.
Cutting the grass.
Oh, wow. How about that?
Over time, I've come to terms with it, and it's nice. But at first, it was definitely the fuel of a lot of anguish.
But, George, you know, this is a nice problem to have when most of us are fighting over, I don't want to take a job, you do the job. It's very nice the two of you are battling it out over which one of you has the extra work to do. That's amazing to me.
Well, you know, and on the bad side, though, I was usually in the house making dinner or cleaning or doing something that way. It was a role reversal thing.
You guys are still together, though, right? You're still married.
Oh, very happy.
Okay, good. That's what I wanted to hear. George, you're in the running. We've got your name down. Thanks so much.
All right.
All right. More of these calls next, and you can jump in at 312-981-7200. What's at stake is a variety sampler pack of sweet and savory treats from Sweet Alley's, that Chicagoland's only dedicated and certified gluten-free bakery. You won't believe how good the food is. Doesn't taste gluten-free at all. We'll take the two best at 312-981-7200. Find out who wins in just a little bit. It's Bill Leff on WGN. All right, it's me, Bill Leff. Wendy has the rest of the day off. It's her birthday. She'll be back on Monday. Here's the question, and you can win a nice prize for this, a variety sampler pack of sweet and savory treats from Sweet Alley's, that Chicagoland's only dedicated and certified gluten-free bakery. I'm telling you, when you eat this stuff, you won't believe it's gluten-free. That much flavor. Really good stuff. SweetAlleys.com, A-L-I, SweetAlleys.com. 312-981-7200. Just call and tell me, what's the craziest thing you and your husband or wife or boyfriend or girlfriend have ever fought about? We've got a lot of texts, too, that are very interesting. The strangest fight of our marriage so far is whether the Twinkie filling is really cream or marshmallow. It's cream, by the way. I hope I solved that for you. I have a husband. This is a different text. I have a husband who goes in the bathroom for 2 or 3 hours a day, 2 or 3 times a day, just to sit and read. I'm sure of it. Here's one. Oh, that just says the Christmas tree lady is nuts. Well, that's possible. We don't have test results proving that. Let's go back to your calls, 312-981-7200. What is the biggest fight that you and your mate have ever had? Let's find out what Robbie's got going. Hey, Robbie, how are you?
Hey, how you doing?
What was the biggest fight?
This was my ex-wife, and we didn't break up over this fight, but this was basically an example of why we broke up. On Valentine's Day, about 7, 8 years ago, I bought her a puppy, a dachshund, a little hot dog-looking dog.
Yeah.
And she thought it was so cute, but she demanded that we take it back because I got the wrong color hair. It was too dark of a hair. We had a tan carpet. The hair would show up on the carpet. So we had to go back and get a tan-colored dog so that it wouldn't show up on the carpet.
And when you brought the dog back, and you did, right? You brought the dog back. What did they say to that? Were they on board with that?
They didn't flip out. They just kind of gave us this blank stare. And the person from the store basically said, "I'll be right back." They went in the back room, and I heard laughing, though that was another part of the fight. She said she didn't hear laughing. She claimed that she had friends who had done the same thing, and they just kind of shook their heads, and we ended up getting a whole different type of a dog. We ended up getting a Cocker Spaniel. it was just ridiculous.
But when something like that happens, you know that the writing's on the wall, don't you? That there's problems ahead.
Oh yeah, it was definitely the. I could see the writing on the wall. Things were definitely keep going. I got a whole bunch.
No, you just need one. That's great. Well, Robbie, you're in the running. We've got your your info. We will let you know. Thank you so much. Happy Valentine's Day. Yeah, I could see where that'd be a little bit of a problem. Let's see what Mary's got for us. Mary, it's you. What is the biggest fight you and your husband or boyfriend or girlfriend have ever had?
My husband and I, we were redoing the bathroom.
Yeah.
And I got to the point where I said, okay, I'm ready to have somebody come in and do it. And he said, no, we're going to do it ourselves. And so we were taking out the tub. And I sat down and I grabbed him by the collar, and I said, this is the last time I'm ever going to do this.
It's a lot of work, isn't it?
I don't like slipping.
No. No one does. And you guys are still together, right?
Oh, yeah. This is our 10th anniversary.
Oh, congratulations. That's good news.
Thank you.
Mary, we've got your info. If you're a winner, we will call you back. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Let's see what Charlene has for us. Charlene, we're looking for the biggest fight you and a loved one have ever had. Probably ridiculous, right? What is it?
Well, my husband and I had a fight over washing dishes. He wouldn't come in and help. And I got so angry that I started throwing all the dishes on the floor and breaking them. He came in to see what was going on, and him still helping, he broke the rest of the dishes. So we're standing in there. Our children walked in and looked at us like we'd gone nuts. And then we both looked at each other and started laughing.
Oh, good.
To this day, we always remember those dishes. And we lived on paper plates for about a week, and then I got a brand new set of Corelware, so everybody was happy.
Good.
Well, the kids still remember.
Good. I love a happy ending on a story like that because, you know.
Well, we were married 43 years before he passed.
Perfect. Perfect. All right, Charlene, you are definitely in the running, okay? We will let you know shortly.
Okay.
All right, take care. Thank Have a happy you. Valentine's Day. Take care. Sometimes you know right in the middle of it. This is ridiculous. We should not be fighting over this, but sometimes you can't let on. You have to let it play out just a little bit. Paul's got one for us. Paul, what's your story? What was your fight over?
We fight over the direction of the twist ties on the bread.
What? Seriously?
Yeah. I insist that they be twisted to the right, and she says, I don't care, and twists them whichever way she wants to.
What's with that? What's with that? And yet, would you consider... despite that, would you consider the marriage to be a happy one, despite the ugliness of the twist tie story?
We've managed to get past that, yes.
All right. That's good news. That's very good news. You're in the running, sir. Stay where you are.
Thank you, sir.
All right. All right. Let me see if I can get one or two more in very, very quickly. Mike has a story for us. Mike, you and your wife don't fight, do you? That's impossible. Mike? Is that you? We lost Mike. All right. Let me get one more in. Hold on a second. Where is Kim? Kim, do I have you? Is that you? Kim?
Yes.
Oh, there you are. All right, Kim, tell us what you guys are fighting over. Is it good or bad?
Oh, it was very bad.
What was
After
it?
26 years of marriage, finding that my ex-husband had locked a lot of interesting clothing articles in his toolbox and came to tell me that how much he enjoyed cross-dressing.
Oh, all right. So he was putting them in his toolbox, ironically.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. So what is your answer to something like that?
There was a little bit of an argument and then a divorce.
Oh, there was. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. That did not end well at all, did it? That
no,
well?
Was...
All right. Kim, I've got you down. If you are a winner, we will let you know shortly, okay? Thanks very much.
Thank you.
All right. I'm getting one more in very, very quickly. Cammie, is that you?
Yep, Cammie.
Cammie, you're our last contestant. What did you and your loved one fight over that's just ridiculous?
Me and my loved one fight every single day over him leaving his shoes by the front door to the point where you can't open the door, and all the children in our house know how to put their shoes away. So in order to take care of it, I take his shoes and chuck them out in the front yard. He has to go get his shoes anytime, rain, snow, sleet. Whatever it is, because he does not know how to put his shoes away.
Does he have? Is there a closet or someplace designated for his shoes that he should be putting
them?
Oh,
yeah.
There is.
There's a shoe bin right there, and he puts his right next to the shoe bin up front of the door so you can't even open the door.
Why is he so difficult, Cammie? What's wrong? He seems like a nice man. He married you. Why would he do this?
Because I think he's just a man.
Is that what it is?
With you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? Even my little two-year-old knows to put his shoes in the bin. My husband, on the other hand, has to make it so difficult every time that he has lost lots of shoes out into the snow. Sleet, like I said. And every time he still comes home and he puts his shoes at the front door where you can't
That's craziness. That is just craziness. All right, Cammie, you are definitely in the running. We will pick our winners next, all right?
All right, thank
Have a great
you.
Valentine's Day. I'm sorry about your strife.
Yeah, I
All right.
know, me
it's
too.
It's terrible. All right, bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, we will pick a winner, actually two winners, and tell them what they've won in just a little bit, and then we'll find out what Ro and Anna have coming up next. It's Bill Leff on WGN. All right, before I check in with Anna and with Brian, who's filling in for Ro, let me quickly announce the winners. two of you will be receiving a variety sampler pack of sweet and savory treats from Sweet Alley's. That's Chicagoland's only dedicated and certified gluten-free bakery. It's located in Hinsdale. You can also see them online at Sweet Alley's, ALI, Alley's.com. We've got two winners of that. And then there's an additional winner. I'll explain that in a little bit. Robbie, who had the terrible, terrible story about picking the wrong dog color. You want to match, evidently, you want to match. Brian, you know this. You and I have talked about this many times. The dog and the carpet should always match. The colors should always match.
Great idea.
Nothing more important than accessorizing.
That's so true.
Well, when they shed, then, you know, you got, you don't, nobody knows.
It's easier.
Nobody knows.
So Robbie,
it's ankle deep.
So Robbie is a winner for that. And then Charlene, who told the story of the broken dishes, a terrible, terrible story, but still, they laughed about it, and I give them high points for that. So they each win the Sweet Alley's gift pack. And then Cammie just told us the story about her husband and the shoes, and she has to throw them out into the snow to make her point. She will be receiving a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. That's Lou Malnati's, 1-800-LOU-TO-GO if you want some Lou Malnati's pizza. Thanks for everybody for participating.
Those were touching stories.
Were all very touching stories.
Very much. Very nice to share like that.
Like episodes of the old Love American style show. Do you remember that show?
Sure, except without the, who was the?
Stuart Margolin.
Stuart Margolin.
Without Stuart Margolin.
Was that the host?
No, he was in the vignettes between the episodes.
And Alan Seuss. Wasn't Alan Seuss in a lot of those?
No, you're thinking of James Hampton.
Am I?
Yep, James
Bill
Hampton.
Bill knows this stuff. Yep. I can't stump him.
No, I was a for some reason.
And Phyllis
Alan
Davis
Seuss
and Barbara Minkus were the two women.
Oh, my gosh.
You're welcome.
Wow.
All right.
You need to put your head down. Take a little rest.
We are going to be talking about money today. Okay, so we're going to start off with Susan Schmidt. She's here every Friday. And the markets, I don't know if you've noticed, maybe you don't check out this stuff, but they've been just roller coaster riding around. And I'm so excited because I paid $1.50 to fill up my car per gallon in the city, which is amazing. But every time this oil keeps going down, you look at your 401k and you have to add 10 more years to your retirement. You know, it's like, why is this so
It's a
so
mixed
linked?
Blessing, Anna, is what it is. It's a mixed blessing.
Sure. I guess we should count our blessings, as my mom
That's
would
all
like
we
to
can
say.
Do.
That's all you can do. And speaking of money, how to do a first-class Valentine's Day and save a ton of money. There's
nice.
A little trick, right, Brian?
Yes, there is. So we're going to talk all about that. The Carnarvon wagon will roll. Richard Roper will be here reviewing Deadpool and Zoolander 2. So we'll talk about that. A lot to get to today.
Have a great show, guys.
Thank you,
Bill. Have a great weekend. Happy
Thanks.
Valentine's
and
Day.
And you.